Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Monday. My name's Bill Leff. That's Wendy Snyder. We're here to entertain and enlighten you.
That's our goal?
Well,
that's our mission statement? Listeners, you in trouble.
If it happens, good for everybody. I'm not saying it will happen. We'll try our best, and we'll see what happens. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to chime in at any point during the show. Did you have a nice weekend?
Bill, Steve asked me that. I can't even remember what I did.
They do tend to fly by, don't they? And I don't know about you, but on a day like yesterday, I almost feel guilty. I had some physical activity. I played tennis, but for the most part, I watched two football games and an X-Files episode. And if you do them, and the Blackhawks game.
Yeah.
So if you do the math, that's way too much sitting around watching things on TV in one day.
You know what I watched?
What?
Stephen Tobolowsky's Primary Instinct.
Oh, yeah?
On Hulu.
He's the actor we had on last week who's been in everything.
200 roles.
Yeah.
This was deep and wonderful and meaningful.
Yeah.
And it was really awesome.
So is he telling stories I'm trying to think of what a representative role would be for him.
I even showed his picture to my husband, and Jim goes, I still don't know who that
is. Oh, really?
I said, are you kidding? Because they do geek him up a little bit in movies.
Always, yeah.
More so, he's...
He's a balding guy,
glasses
slightly built, always glasses, plays like just a town guy all the time. Somebody you know from the city, from the town.
Although he's played some bad roles where he...
Yes.
He was in Californication and did something. He was also... they showed like a bunch of clips of him also being a bad guy.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was like a one-man show, kind of stand-up, kind of not, about an hour 15. And he talked about being an actor and just about stories and your history and meaningful things. He talked about his parents. It was really touching. Oh, my
God. And you can see it where?
It's on Hulu.
Oh, it's on Hulu.
Hulu. Right. So if you are a subscriber, it's free, and it was really, really great.
Let me run this past you. Tell me what you think, because I'm mixed on this. I watched the better part of both football games yesterday.
Didn't watch a lick of it.
At the end, well, you know how it ended up.
Yes, I do.
You know what happened. At the end of the second game, it's really weird. They bring Cam Newton out. Cam Newton was the winning quarterback for the Carolina Panthers, and he's got a lot of personality. He's not just a great football player, but he's got a ton of personality. And they come out and they're interviewing him right after he won the game. And a lot of people think he should be the MVP. He had an unbelievable year. Nobody expected the Carolina Panthers to go 15-1 and now go to the Super Bowl. So they say to him, tell us about the Super Bowl. Are you excited? And he said, now keep in mind, this is 3 hours after Denver won. And we know they're going to the Super Bowl. So Cam Newton goes, I got to be honest, I don't know who we're playing against, but it's going to be a great game. And I kept thinking, how does he not know who they're playing against? At some point, and I know he was playing a very important football game, but at some point, doesn't he say to anybody, hey, first score? Does anyone know what the score was in the first game? Because I'm curious. Because
doesn't the
know.
Coach like give it a little announcement during his pep talk after the game?
I would think so.
I could see me not knowing.
When did he say that, Bill?
He said that right after the game. They interviewed him immediately after the game. So the early game was already done at that point for over 3 hours, 3.5 hours.
Because I left for a while and then went back for the trophy presentation.
Yeah, it was right in there. It was just prior to the trophy presentation.
Okay, because then Bradshaw said, oh, you're going to be playing
he brought
Manning.
It up again because even Terry Bradshaw thought, oh, that's kind of weird that the guy who just quarterbacked this game didn't know what happened in the earlier game. And then I thought, maybe it's one of those things where you want to be so focused and not think about anything else other than the game.
He went out. He was doing shots. That's why he didn't know.
No, that was after. You mean between games?
Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers are going to the Super Bowl, but first they had to stop at the club to celebrate their win over the Arizona Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
And he was hanging with Juvenile.
The rapper?
How did you know
that? That's a rapper. Juvenile.
By the way,
you and me too.
What do you and Panthers coach Ron Rivera have in common?
Oh,
you both liked the Bears at one time.
Oh, maybe. I'm trying to think. What would Ron Rivera and I both have in common?
Both employed by WGN Radio.
At the time. Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
After he played, he was around here quite a bit for a couple of years.
How did I never meet him? You must have met him then.
Yeah, definitely.
A nice man.
Very nice man. He when I used to do the post-game interviews, you know, when he was playing,
yeah.
If there was ever a tear, like the Don Majkowski replay game against the Packers, yeah. One, if there was ever a really terrible game when you had to go in there and talk to someone and no one wanted to talk to you, always go to Ron Rivera.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
I love guys like that.
Well, could this be why he didn't know? Because after their victory from the Arizona Cardinals, they went to celebrate and have a cigar and do shots and hang out with the juvenile.
Well, that was after their own game. Like, there was time between games. Like,
how many shots did he do?
No. The shots came after the second game.
Okay,
they wouldn't let you do shots before your own game. That doesn't
happen. This was after his game. I was just wondering if that's why he didn't know what team they were playing.
No, it just the way it played out. Like, the game's over, and then immediately they go to him on the field, and he just says, I don't know who we're going to play. And then they let him know. They go, well, it's going to be the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning. And he goes, well, wow, the sheriff, huh? Wow. Because that's one of the nicknames Peyton Manning has. And you see it setting in like, wow, now it's getting real. You know,
wasn't
like
there
that.
An announcement or something in the stadium?
Well,
how
not only announcements,
know?
But if you've ever been to any sports stadium, they post the scores of other games everywhere. Like, you can't miss it. But then, like I said before, if he's so focused on the game and wants to think about nothing else, good for him. But I would still want to know. What's ahead?
That's part of your focus, though, isn't it, to figure out who you're playing?
I think so.
That takes more focus than you'd have. I mean, you got to know that.
I know.
That seems crazy.
It was, and I know you're not the biggest of football fans, but I have to say this playoff season gave you a little bit of everything. There were so many really good games, a couple of blowouts, but you really got to see some incredible football throughout the playoffs.
I didn't even know what was going on.
Really?
The first
I'm
game
sorry.
Was so nice yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, exciting.
I do like the sound of football.
Just not to sit and watch it.
No, we have a loft that needs to be closed up. But if I hear football in the family room, it lulls me to sleep. The crowd noise,
I totally get that. And football is great because it's one of the sports where you can do other things. Football and baseball, you can kind of do other things
and
while
come
the game
back
is
to
on.
The, yeah, you're right.
You can. Like, hockey's nonstop action.
You got to pause it.
Yeah. Yeah,
you definitely
it's a big difference.
Have to. Yeah, I didn't. I don't think football was happening in our house.
Nobody watched the game.
I can't believe
yesterday.
Jim didn't watch it.
Oh, wow. It's the best weekend of football. The two best games of the year, usually.
You know what's sad though is you gave up watching all the Bears games, but you'll watch other teams.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about that too because.
I know this is big and this is feeding into the Super Bowl, but still, over the past weekends, you've watched other games.
I've watched a bunch, and it comes down to this. Like, you see what the Bears could be if they knew what they were doing. You see some of the premier teams in the league, and you go, why can't the Bears do any of that? Like, the quarterbacks just go in, and they've got so much poise and so much. Like, you could tell, especially yesterday, with three out of the four quarterbacks, they had an agenda. They knew what to do. They knew if they were 8 yards short, they knew where to go with the ball. The Bears just are they don't have any kind of an idea of how to do things like that.
Bill, do you know that John Fox helped build and take both of these teams to the Super Bowl?
I do know
previously?
That. I do know that.
Don't you have any hope in your heart?
Oh,
for
a lonely
Bears team.
Oh, I do.
And I take that back because I guess Jim did watch the game because I heard something about mumbling like that is a quarterback.
Right. That's what I kept thinking yesterday, too.
So I did hear that at home.
All right, so it's not just me. Like, you go, that's kind of the way it needs to be played. They know when to rush. They know when to do that. They know where the passes need to be. They kind of get how to advance the ball and stop the other team. For some reason, the Bears just don't have a printout on that.
Well, they will. They're rebuilding.
When?
Look at how long the Cubs were lovable losers, and they've turned it around.
I know.
It's about time that the Bears do it, since the only other season that mattered was 85, 86.
It's been a while, hasn't it?
They'll do it.
It's been a little while. All right, let's do this. A quick break, a lot more show. We're 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right, we're talking football. I did not watch a lick of it. I apologize. I did watch. I am a hockey fan. I watch the Blackhawks. That's all I do.
Don't they look fantastic?
Yes.
I mean, I know they had a little glitch there in Florida, but there shouldn't be hockey in Florida.
And they can't win every game, Bill.
It's impossible.
I was talking to Jim down off the ledge, too, because, you know, they look bad. They did look bad those couple of games.
Yeah.
Coach Q even said it.
Yeah. It's impossible. All right. Kevin found the audio yesterday. Now, I'll quickly set it up for you. This is after the second game. This is after the Carolina Panthers won, and they talked to Cam Newton, the quarterback. A little post-game interview. The earlier game at that point had been over for nearly 3.5 hours. We know that Denver beat New England. We know that, but for some reason, Cam Newton didn't seem to know that. Listen.
People said we couldn't do. It's not over yet. Right. It's not over yet. You know, we don't. I don't know who we're playing yet, but we'll be ready to go in 2 weeks.
Well, I can tell you, I know you're a big dreamer. You're playing Denver and Peyton Manning. Did you ever think of the Super Bowl you'd oppose him?
Oh, wow. Playing the sheriff. But anyway, we're going to live in the moment right now. We're going to be excited. I'm very excited about this.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that...
Come on.
Right. Well, he knew it was down to one of two guys. It was either going to be Tom Brady or Peyton Manning. Neither of them are rollovers. They're both two of the best quarterbacks in history. So now, I don't know if you'll watch the Super Bowl. It's in 2 weeks. It's 2 weeks from yesterday.
No, because I'm not impressed with Coldplay and Beyonce. Thank you very much.
Well, you don't have to. I mean, that's just the halftime show. They won't have Coldplay and Beyonce won't be on the field during the rest of the game at all.
I just go for the dips.
That's it.
And the drinks.
That's it?
Mm-hmm. And then I talk and catch up with all the neighbors I haven't seen in a while.
The matchup, though, is great because it's one of the classic quarterbacks. It's Peyton Manning, who's been, I believe, an MVP 5 times, I believe, against Cam Newton, who's one of the young upcoming stars of the game. So that's a nice little matchup. It'll be a fun game to watch. I know you're not that into it.
But you may have sold me on the Cam Newton thing.
He really is. He's one of those guys. And to answer your question earlier about why you can be so disenchanted with the Bears and then like stuff like this where it's not a Chicago team, when you see him, just the way he handles himself and he doesn't get rattled and he knows where the guys are and he knows to throw to guys that have the same colored jersey that he has, like for some reason that doesn't come up in Bears meetings. Look at the color shirt you're wearing. Throw to guys with similar shirts. They don't seem to tell them that at Bears camp, but other teams know it. That's if they'd hire me to be an offensive coordinator, and I mean offensive, because I would offend these guys.
Would.
I would go in there and I'd go, the most important thing in football is knowing what color shirt you have and throwing the guys with similar shirts. That's the key to winning.
And good old Cam seems like he has personality and enthusiasm.
He does.
Which is something I haven't seen with our quarterbacks.
He does.
Somebody just said, Peyton Manning throws remind me of Jim McMahon's at the end, wobbling duck in midair.
Peyton Manning at this point is toward the end of his career. This may be the end for him. And he's been injured a lot this year. I think he's the best quarterback ever. I'm a huge fan of his, but he's far from 100%. I put him, Kevin and I were talking about this. He's between 60 and 70%. He's still a better quarterback at 60 or 70% than we've got at 100% in Jay Cutler.
I'd take him any
day over Jay Cutler.
You're a bitter young man.
I'm not. I like winning. That's the reason I watch sporting events is I want my team to win. He knows how to win. He's that good.
Doesn't everybody want their team to win?
Everybody wants their team to win, but the difference between wanting to win and knowing how to win is gigantic. Bears have no idea how
to
win.
Get Bill on the offensive coaching roster.
Kevin, print out a resume for me and send that over to Hallis Hall.
Offensive.
Put a smiley face on it so they know that I like things.
630 says you were talking about the local color in the teams. Don't forget that the Denver Broncos person that caught the first two touchdowns yesterday is from Naperville.
There's a couple of guys that are from the Chicago area, and I don't know who they are now, but every once in a while, you know, they'll mention the hometown of some of the players. And, we're represented in some way, shape, and form there.
Not on the Bears.
No. No.
Isn't that funny? This kid from Naperville doesn't even want to play on the Bears.
Right.
We don't know that for a fact. You're right. Sucking me in. I don't want to be in the bitter bandwagon. I really don't.
It's just when you see teams knowing how to do it, well, you go, why aren't we one of those teams that knows how to do it?
Bill, you think they want to know how to do it too. And I think they're, you know, on the mend.
Right. Right. Can I tell you the other drama you missed yesterday? And I'll ask a question that I have no idea what the answer is to. In the early game, the Patriots, they used tablets during the game. They used computers, and theirs went down early in the game. The Broncos, who were the home team, theirs worked perfectly. They could use it to draw plays and say, we need to do more of this and get a guy out that way and stuff like that. But the Patriots, they just kept showing them frustrated because they couldn't get their computers to work. Is it possible somebody could have hacked that system and made the visiting team's computers not work?
So it couldn't have happened to a better guy.
To Belichick?
Right.
Really?
A guy who doesn't know anything about cheating,
on
right?
On the sideline saying, damn, I wish I'd thought of that.
I doubt it because they were probably all on the same network.
No, I've been told from a couple different people that they have to use different networks.
I guess that would make sense.
And there's actually a rule that says if the equipment isn't working at the beginning of the game, the other team has to shut theirs down too. But this happened after the game had already started. So, I mean, the timing of it was beautiful.
They use tablets now? God.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking when they were there. You see the frustration, like, well, what are we going to do? Our tablets won't work. But I thought they were playing football for a long, long time.
Go back to the clipboard, people.
Yeah.
Plus, the clipboard looks so much better with a coach having a clipboard in hand.
No, I think it's, though, for the, you know, they used to run pictures up and down from the sidelines up to the press box.
They did.
So I think that's what it's for formations and things like that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Look at technology. Do the Bears use tablets?
No.
Tablets from the Bible?
Exactly. They have to carve them.
All right, a break. More show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. How about them Blackhawks, ladies and gentlemen? Jamal Mayers joins us right now, former Blackhawk. You hear his voice. You see his face. He's one of the people that gives us the good news that the Blackhawks are winning again. Hi, Jamal. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Excellent. Thank you. I want to ask you a question. We were just talking about the football playoffs, and I was saying how there's a huge difference between knowing that you want to win and actually getting the job done and winning. That translates in all sports, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you've got to go out there and you've got to execute. And it's, you know, it's not all just talk, and you've got to go out there and perform. And that's part of what makes the Blackhawks so special, is that they do all their talking on the ice.
We had you in the studio, Bill. I think you were on vacation
when
Jamal came up here. But we were talking about One Goal Three, the book that was coming out for Christmas. Of course, Hat Trick, the accompanying DVD. Not accompanying. You have to buy it. Purchase separately. And you added to One Goal Three. One of the best books ever. We talked about this before, Bill. It's like a pop-up kids book where little things fall out and really cool things are in there.
Yeah, they've done a great job of making it interactive. There's a DVD, obviously, that accompanies it. There's these little cards in there. There's a flag, championship flag replica. There's so many different unique things that you can take away from it that make it special and kind of adds that memorabilia type of feel to it as a keepsake for anybody who chooses to buy it.
And I was just reading that you have been promoted to the front office as of, what, last year? You're now the community liaison for the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean?
Well, actually, what it means is I'm out there in the community. I get to... The Blackhawks already have in place, and I'm lucky enough to be a part of it, in their youth department. We're going to visit over 100 schools, CPS schools this year, and all kinds of different schools. You know, introducing hockey to kids in the Chicagoland area, basically, for the most part, most of them have never touched a hockey stick before. So by the end of the day, they're having a great time. They're having a game and giving them the skills so they can implement them into their phys ed class. And, you know, it's been fun. By the end of the day, like I said, all the kids are having smiles on their face. And, you know, at first there's a lot of trepidation about playing hockey and never been introduced to it. But these kids ended up loving it. And, you know, the next step of that, obviously, is as we get this practice facility built, is that second sheet of ice. It's essentially Rocky's legacy is giving back to the community. And we all know there's many obstacles to playing the game. Obviously, the cost... We want to eliminate those obstacles. So Rocky's done a fantastic job of getting this practice facility up and donating the equipment, providing transportation, programming, talking about education and nutrition. You know, are we going to build the next, you know, are we going to make an NHL hockey player? I'm not sure. I'm not saying it couldn't happen. But, you know, at the very least, we're going to, you know, inspire these kids to be better people and have confidence in themselves going forward. So, if we can use hockey as that tool, then we're looking forward to that.
Jamal, a child growing up in the city now is so fortunate to have the Hawks as part of the city's makeup and culture. There were a lot of down years. I know you didn't grow up here, but believe me when I tell you, there were many years where your average Chicagoan, kid or adult, couldn't name three players on the team, and now it's just everyday conversation. You know, them winning as often as they've won and being such a great team has really made a huge difference to the city.
Oh, there's no question, and it's become the new generation's team. You think about it, kids from 4 years old, maybe even younger, to 45, 50, it's their team. This is the team they know, and this is the team that they've loved for the last 7-8 years and that they've been on this journey with. I mean, 3 cups in 6 years is unbelievable. It's in a modern day with the salary cap era, it's a dynasty. And, you know, they're not done. That's the scary part, is that, you know, look at this year. I thought that they would be a little bit tired thinking about all the hockey they have played in recent years, but Stan's done a fantastic job and his staff of plugging the holes that were there and finding hidden gems. You know, you look at Panarin, look at how well he's played.
That guy is amazing. I mean, really. And his connection to Patrick Kane and Artem Anisimov, I have become, I told you last time you were up here, I live and breathe Blackhawks now, and I can throw down and do sports talk. I really can.
I like it.
I really do. And so now during the All-Star break, what are these guys going to do? They're not going to practice. They're going to chill, aren't they? They've had a pretty hectic schedule as of late.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain that they've played almost like 14 games in the last 23 days. So it's been a lot of hockey. So I think the break comes at an opportune time. I believe guys are heading all kinds of different directions to, you know, relax and get some sun and step away from the game. But knowing this team, they'll definitely bring their workout gear, and they'll make sure they stay active and rest their bodies, because, you know, the season ends up being an absolute sprint to the finish once after the All-Star break, and next thing you know, you're into the playoffs. So that's the ultimate goal, is for them to be ready for when the playoffs begin, and knowing this group as well as I do, they'll certainly be ready.
Jamal, how about this? A couple of weeks ago, the Hawks found themselves 13 points out of first place, and then 2.5 weeks later, they're 5 points ahead. I never saw a turnaround like that from any team that quickly. Have you?
No, I haven't. And I think that, you know, obviously going on a 12-game win streak certainly helps, and it coincides with the struggles of obviously the Dallas Stars and obviously the Blues were struggling at some point too during that stretch run. So, you know, they've really made up a lot of ground. And I think that it became a rallying point of sorts to keep that going. And, you know, but they played a lot of hockey. I wasn't surprised that they struggled in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad they came out with a great performance last night, a huge win against the St. Louis Blues, one of their huge rivals. So when you look at Corey Crawford and what he's done, arguably their MVP behind Patrick Kane, you know, his 7th shutout of the season. He's been fantastic. This is the best hockey I've seen him play.
Go on, Ryan.
I was just going to say, you know, 3 cups that we have had, 3 Stanley Cups. You won the cup. Your name's on the 2013 cup. The team that's on the ice now, to me, looks like the best we've ever had. And, you know, we missed Patrick Sharp, Johnny Oduya. When Brandon Saad left, it was like, oh, God, what's going to happen? But I'm seeing a better team now than before.
Yeah, it's hard to say that they're better because those teams have cups. So, but I would agree that I really like the way the defense look, because you look at last year and, you know, really they were running with the entire playoffs with 4D, which is, I don't know how they ended up getting that done. But now you look at their defense now and the way that they've been able to plug holes. You've got defensemen like JVR with another, TVR with another year of experience. Who's playing extremely well for them. You plug holes as well with young defensemen coming in. You've done a fantastic job. Obviously, you've got Gustafson. Ever since he's been up, he's been fantastic. He sits at plus 10, which is remarkable. I mean, this is a guy that nobody wanted. And the Hawks seem to find these guys and plug them into holes. And you know, obviously they went through some injuries and they had to force some guys into a little bit earlier than they thought if they were ready. Like, you look at Meschenter stepped in, you look at forward, you got Rasmussen's been playing great. You look at Philip Deneau. These are guys, they weren't sure maybe that they would be ready, but they've proven that they are, and that's a huge compliment organizationally what they've done and how they're building things.
Jamal, let me run a theory past you, and you can use this on Comcast if you like. Just give me some credit on air. In other years, I noticed that there was this period after a goal would be scored, maybe against us or maybe for us, there was this minute and a half that Corey Crawford seemed a little tentative in the net, would give up some goals in that next 90 seconds or 2 minutes. This year, that has not been the case. He seemed sharper than ever after a goal either way. Have you noticed that?
You know what? I just noticed that he's been razor focused, and even when the team has been struggling, he's been the most consistent.
Yeah.
You think about, and I think that comes with experience. I think that he's able to allow things to, you know, roll off his shoulder. This is a guy who's got two Stanley Cups. He continues to not get the respect that he deserves around the league for whatever reason.
And really, why is he not a part of the All-Star team?
Well, I think that has a lot to do with Pekka Rinne, you know, the All-Star game being in Nashville, because statistically, it's not even close. You know, in hindsight, it might turn out, it's unfortunate because he deserves the recognition.
Yeah.
Selfishly, as a fan of the team and looking for what they want to do going down, I think as exciting as the All-Star game is going to be, I think it's the most dangerous thing is for the goalies. These guys are going to go in cold. They're incentivizing them with a lot of money. It's going to be a quicker pace. It's 3-on-3. It's going to be fast. They're going to go in cold. They're going to expect to go post-to-post on backdoor plays with the most skilled players in the world. I don't know if I'd want him in the net there. You know, it's going to be hardest on those goalies. So it might be a blessing in disguise that he gets a few days rest.
What do you see happening after the All-Star break? Will there be any changes in lineups, any moves that the Blackhawks will make? Things are going really well. Do you want to shake that up in any way?
Well, I know that just from being an observer of Stan's, you know, and I won't speak for him, he always seems to like to get ahead of things.
Mm-hmm.
He likes to make his moves, I think, the 4 to 6 weeks out. So, you know, he just made a trade, obviously, and, you know, maybe that could be the end of it. And if something pops up, fine. But I think he's always been someone who likes to get ahead of it. You know, so, but I like this team. I like this group. I think they have everything it takes. You know, obviously, there's some question whether or not Shazi can fill in admirably in a long-term basis in that role. But there's no reason why Table can't move back up there at some point. You know, there's no reason why, you know, some of these guys that they just traded for can't fit in there. So, you know, Panik possibly could fit in there. You never know. So
if he wakes up in time to get to the game.
Yeah.
Isn't that what happened? He overslept and missed the morning skate.
Yeah.
And Coach Q is not going to stand for that, and he didn't play.
No, that's how it works. So, you know, you got to get up for morning skate. I mean, it's at 11 o'clock.
Well, he's new to the team, you know, the adjustment for time.
I'll tell you, though, Jamal, my alarm went off today, and I'm like, I better be on time or Coach Q will pull me for the show. I don't want that.
That's right. Well, you know what? He's still a young guy. It's a learning moment for him. And
I'll never be late again. I can guarantee that.
Exactly.
I know when I didn't get to meet you, Jamal, last time you had told Wendy about your clothing line. Is that still going? Are you still running the clothing line?
Yeah, it's just taking some time to get the website up, but everything's going to be pretty much web-based. It's going to be called davidcrewclothing.com, and we're going to focus on sport coats and dress shirts for now, and we'll see where it takes us. I'm excited about it.
You're a very sharp-dressed man, that's for sure. And there's a picture of Jonathan Toews, who is modeling one of your long sport coats. Or actually, that's an overcoat. Very sharp dresser. And, I mean, really, you had the guts to bring the bow tie back.
Every once in a while, it's okay to mix it up.
Right. But just to see that, I mean, you know,
sure.
We had Fahey Flynn, one of the newscasters here in Chicago,
right.
Way before your time.
Orville Redenbacher,
right.
Pee Wee Herman, and you, Jamal.
That's great.
But it works. I mean, and if you go shopping, which, Bill, I know you don't go shopping that much.
It's been a while.
But they have bow ties all over the place,
yeah.
And it's really cool. I love when history in the fashion world repeats itself. So what website can we look for when you get your David Crew clothing line up on the website?
Yeah, that's what it'll be. It'll be davidcrewclothing.com, and hopefully in the next 2-3 months we'll be up and running, and people can check us out. It's all custom made. It's all easy to do, easy to follow through, and you can see all the fabrics and pick your styling points and make some kind of signature things on your jackets or shirts that make it unique and special for just you.
That's what you do.
Great
and you
idea.
Do it well. So what do you do during the All-Star break? You're going to be, of course, on the Comcast Sportsnet. What will you be doing?
Yeah, I'm actually got some time off. I'm not going to be doing anything. Obviously, the Hawks won't be playing, so I'll just be resting and relaxing and you know, taking my girls to soccer and doing and getting my little guy on the ice.
How old is your little guy to get him on the ice?
He's 3. Jeez. He just started learning to play, but I've had him on the ice for the last 6-7 months. So
Jamal, there's a couple of guys in the NHL who are right around that age. That's not ridiculous to think about.
Well, have
well, you know what? I remember when I was younger, I was in or my early 20s. Keith Tkachuk was a teammate of mine. He brought his son, Matthew and Brady, out to skate with us before practice and so forth. And Joel was the coach there. He was great about letting the guys bring their kids. Well, Matthew's now the number one rated North American player for this year's draft, 2016. So it's pretty exciting to know him when he was just a little guy, 4 years old, walking around the room.
Well, that's what I love so much about the Blackhawks is there the camaraderie between the teammates and how the locker room has changed from the first cup they won to the last one, because now there are kids in the locker room. It's a family community, and we're glad you are the community liaison for the Chicago Blackhawks. Good work, Jamal.
Well, I appreciate it, Bill, Wendy. Thanks for your time. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. We're looking forward to the rest of the season. Thanks, Jamal. Jamal Mayers, everybody, for Comcast Sportsnet. He does a great job over there. We'll take a quick break and then more show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Jamal Mayers, by the way, a very nice man. I didn't get to meet him. You had him on, like you said, when I was on vacation, but I've watched him on Comcast, and I always thought, I bet he's a good guy. He was a good guy.
He is a really good guy, and he showed some scars from his years in hockey.
I can imagine.
Was this our first segment of Hockey Talk?
Hockey Talk.
How'd that go,
you think? We'll work on the name. The name is still under development, but you know your stuff. I mean, you know the players. You know their history. I'm proud of you. You know it.
It's so funny because, really, when you listen to sports radio, honest to God, Bill, it's just people regurgitating what someone else has told them.
I know.
It's just guys sitting around talking, and it's like you hear. And the politics is much like that as well.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
But I have just all of a sudden got, you know, part of the problem was we had a no-def TV. I couldn't see the puck. It was really hard watching Blackhawks games.
Right, right.
Now I love it. I have my Black. We're a family that wears the Blackhawks jammy bottoms and our Blackhawks sweaters.
All right,
and,
there's an interesting picture in our heads.
And we eat the DiGiorno's pizza.
Wow. You really are true fans. That's
I love
excellent.
It. It's great.
We're going to take a break. We've got news, Steve on the news, and then a lot more show coming your way after that. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. You'll find this shocking. Donald Trump said something outrageous over the weekend.
I heard it. I found it. And I brought it up to some friends of mine who, I don't know why, seem to really love Donald Trump. And I think this may have changed their mind.
Is this the deal breaker finally?
For the people that I know, it kind of might have.
Ironically, for those of you who missed it, and we will play you exactly what he said in just a second.
Whack job.
He was talking about his own popularity, which he does fairly frequently talk about his own popularity. And he was pointing out that he could do something incredibly outrageous and still have the support of his fan base. So let's play it, and then we'll discuss it like adults. We're at 312-981-7200. This is Donald Trump on Saturday. Listen in.
The people, my people are so smart. And you know what else they say about my people? The polls. They say, I have the most loyal people. Did you ever see that? Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay?
All right, stop for just a second.
Stop forever.
Let's stop forever.
You don't say that. Do you say that when you're running for the top office of this country?
I can't remember. And, you know, I haven't been around since the inception of America, but I don't remember a presidential candidate ever pointing out that he could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue in New York and shoot another human being and still be popular.
It does make you laugh, doesn't it?
It makes you laugh because you say to yourself, at some point, one of these things, I don't know what he has to do or say. And actually, that's the genesis of his whole comment is, I'm omnipotent. I can do anything now.
I cannot fail.
It's impossible for me to fail. I'm too big to fail. So he pointed out he could stand in the middle of a street in New York City, in the middle of Fifth Avenue, and shoot a human being, and he would still have the support of his followers.
Can I tell you something? If you really like this guy and you think he'd make a great president, then by all means, you know, if he wins the Republican nomination, which he very well
looks that way,
may do,
yeah,
go ahead and vote for him. And, you know, I hate to say this. If he wins,
yeah,
and he becomes president of the United States,
yes,
I live here. I'm not pulling a Baldwin and saying I'm moving.
Yeah, you will support him.
Because he's I support the office, not necessarily the person in the office. But good God, please, people.
I am going to spend 4 years under my bed.
No, you're not.
Hiding. Maybe what some of us look for in a president is the ability to stand in the middle of a busy street and shoot at people. Maybe that's something that's been lacking in presidents past. Maybe that's what we need, is much like the movie The Running Man. We need a guy to just hold a gun to people and shoot at them. Maybe that's what we're looking for in a president.
312-981-7200. I think Tim has a theory here. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good. We're astounded. Actually, are we shocked?
Yeah, I'm still shocked. I still am. What do you think, Tim?
Hey, here's the thing. You're Trump talking crazy, right?
Yeah.
He's looking for a way to get out of it because he didn't think it would go this far. So he keeps talking stupid, thinking his ratings will go down, but they're going up.
There might be some truth. I really believe at the very end of this, when he wins the nomination, he's going to go, I punked you. I don't even want it. I just wanted to prove that I could do it.
But it,
right. Oh, he's going to fire himself.
You're fired.
All right, from let's look at it from different angles. From an ego standpoint, to be the president of the United States, I can't imagine a bigger ego stroke than being elected the president of the United States. So he wins point there. From a financial standpoint, he stands to lose so much money by taking 4 years out to be the president. It's not even funny how much money he'll lose.
You don't think he's going to stop his other money-making ventures?
He said about a week or 10 days ago, that the only thing he'll focus on is the presidency, that his other businesses.
I don't believe him.
You can't run an empire, a real estate empire, and be president simultaneously.
I know that, but do you believe him?
I don't know what to believe anymore.
Tim, thank you so much. We appreciate the call. Good theory there.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Tim.
Take care.
I don't know what to believe. I didn't believe it would get this far. When he first threw his hat into the ring, I jokingly said on this show several times, future President Trump, as a joke, because that was never going to happen. He was a guy who was the host of The Apprentice. He's not going to be the president. So as a joke, future President Donald Trump. It's not a joke anymore.
Can I ask everyone a question out there? You included, Bill.
Sure.
And again, 312-981-7200. Do you even like people like that, that all they do when you discuss something with them, it all comes back to them? He's a blowhard. He's tooting his own horn. Would you ever hang out with someone like that?
Never.
Would you ever
never be
friends? Would you respect someone like that? I would see that person and go, oh, yeah, God.
This guy again.
I got to get away from him.
I know.
I mean, why are people – I know – you know, all right, Joe has a thought on this too, and I get – why don't you say it, Joe?
Well, I believe that his supporters support him because they're tired of these scripted politicians. They're basically actors reading a script that's written for them by political spin doctors. And he's obviously not. He's obviously speaking off the top of his head, which is sometimes good and sometimes bad. But he doesn't owe anyone anything. He's supporting his campaign for his own campaign. So he's not going to be in debt to anyone, doesn't owe anyone favors.
He's still taking...
People are tired of the usual politicians.
I agree.
They're tired of it.
But we're all tired. Everyone's tired of it. But
he's not the guy.
Well, he's the only guy that at this point is not connected to that system. The only one is... Ross. He reminds me of Ross Perot. He was like that back then. He almost won.
Yeah, but...
a third party.
And Ross Perot was crazy, but not to this extent.
And he didn't almost win. He factored in the decision, but he didn't.
Yeah, 20% for an outside candidate who's not part
of the
major parties was pretty good, you know.
Well, let me tell you something. Thanks for calling, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
Somebody
Joe.
Is saying that we don't understand sarcasm.
No,
and
no,
that
no.
That was a joke. I think you and I both get it.
Without a doubt.
But you don't even joke about things. I mean, this is a future president of the United States talking like this.
Yeah.
That is laughable.
If anybody else said this, you pick the candidate, you pick the side. Name any candidate. If they had said these exact same words, I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and I would still have the loyalty of my supporters. we would be so baffled by it, but because it's Trump, we go, well, that, you know what, that's the way he plays, that's what he says.
And he would never do that, I know that, because quite honestly, I think he's too big of a wuss to do that. So obviously, it's a joke, I get it. Jim?
Hi, how are you?
We're good, we're baffled.
You know, I have to kind of agree with Joe, because, you know, all these people are so scripted, like he said, and Hillary, you can tell she's like, so guarded in every single word she says that it's just a breath of fresh air to have somebody out there that just kind of says what's on the top of their mind and doesn't fit the bill of a politician.
But that's what you, when you hear a guy say, I could stand in the middle of the street in New York City and shoot at a guy and people would still like me, is that how you perceive it, as a breath of fresh air?
No, but I see it as a guy just saying that he could just about do whatever he wants right now, and the poll that you were choosing from is so poor that it would take something drastic to make him look bad.
I think it makes me uneasy.
Like a euphemism, or you know what I mean? He's just, you know, he's just kind of using it as a parody, maybe.
Right.
You know?
And to his credit, I do have to say this, because, you know, we played you a bit of the tape. It did get a laugh. I mean, people who were there watching him did chuckle at that.
It's an uncomfortable laugh, in my opinion.
It is definitely an uncomfortable laugh.
How do you react to that?
Well, it is, like you said, it's not something you really want to say if you're, you know, going for the office. But you got to take it for its face value and who's saying it. And also, you know, you need a guy like him because look at how successful he is in running a business. And isn't this country a big business?
Yes, but there are nuances that you need to have, too, like, you know, dealing with other countries, foreign policy.
Yeah,
I don't...
and you know what? To get the respect of other countries, sometimes it takes a guy that you're a little bit afraid of and think might be a little crazy. You look at North Korea. Nobody really messes with them too much because
all right,
you know, the guy's a whack job.
Good point, Jim. For once, you, a listener, you have turned me over to the world of Trump.
All right, thank you.
Thank
Can
you,
I say
Jim.
Something really quick about the sarcasm angle? This is a country. America is dipped in sarcasm. This whole country plays on a daily basis with sarcasm. I'm not positive sarcasm translates when you're dealing with China or Russia or anybody else from around the world. Something gets lost in the translation, I think, when you're playing with sarcasm around the world.
Bill, this says it best, and we'll take a break. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to call or text. But regarding Trump, says 586, it's called humor and sarcasm, you joyless goofballs.
We get that. I so totally get that it's sarcastic. But it's just the mere act of a guy who could easily be our next president saying to a crowd, I could go to New York, I could shoot at a guy, people would still love me. What?
You don't say that.
No. Not when you're running for the president. All right. More of your thoughts on this, 312-981-7200. Your calls or texts. We'll be back in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about Donald Trump, as we tend to do from time to time. And Donald Trump was speaking on Saturday and mentioned to the crowd that he is so popular right now that he could just shoot a guy. He could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose voters.
He should have said, I'm just going to stand in the middle of Congress
and
shoot
a
guy.
Guys in Congress. That would have actually got more response. People would have really loved that. And then, if I may, Kevin, do you still have the audio clip? Because I'd love to play the rest of it after he says that he could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue, because he then did the most stereotypical thing that Trump does, is instead of talking about anything substantial about his plans to go ahead and make the country better, he just spent the rest of the time telling everybody how incredibly popular he is, how he's far more popular than the other candidates. Just play a little bit of that, Kevin, if you could.
Trump's voters are by far, you know, I'm at 68%, 69%. I'm at 90% total. Like, will you say absolutely? I think it's 68% or 69%. Will you most likely stay? That gets into the 90s. Other guys are like a 10. A guy like Jeb Bush, he has a nobody, but he's like they don't have people. They have nothing. Rubio, soft. They're all soft.
So that you don't have to play anymore, because he just continues to prattle on and on. So instead of using that time to say, look, there's a lot of issues going on in the country right now, and because I want to be president, this is what I would do to make things better or to fix things, he just recites poll numbers and goes, I'm way up here, they're way down there. So if you want to be on the winning team, I'm your guy because I'm way up there, they're over there. That doesn't make sense either. What's the strategy in that?
I have no idea, Bill. I really don't get it. And we have a lot of texts that are saying, let me find it, because this one, hang on.
Can I guess that we're being too hard on Donald Trump?
Oh, there's a bunch of those. But there's also someone that just said, Trump supporters, we're just enjoying the show. Here it is. Come on. I believe most of Trump's supporters are just enjoying the show and will never vote for him in a real election. That's what I'd like to know.
That's a good question. Is that all that this is a curiosity? And then when it comes down to the actual voting, they'll just go, yeah, but I wouldn't really vote for the guy. I love the fact that he's front and center, but I don't think he should be president. But that's a weird mixed message.
I do love that he is breaking the mold of politicians.
Yeah.
I do. And then other people, oh, would you rather have Hillary lie to our face? That's better. Wake up.
Yes, I would. Yes, I would. The short answer is absolutely I would. She has an incredible amount of political experience. He has zero political experience. And I know you could say, but he's run companies. But the difference between running a company and running the country.
It's huge.
As he would say, is huge.
It's a huge difference.
I know it is. I know it is.
All right, let's talk to Jake. Hi, Jake. How are you?
Hey, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
Yeah, the comment about what Trump made about shooting somebody in the middle of the street, I bet you people put a little spin on it, and they try to say that it was probably somebody who was crossing the border illegally, or maybe it was some European refugees.
Right.
Who would be the one that he was shooting.
Someone who had it coming, right, Jake?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. They deserve to be shot. Yeah, that's a good idea. It's very possible. There's always a spin to everything. Thanks, Jake.
Appreciate it. Someone just said a businessman is running the state of Illinois. How's that working for us?
You could debate that.
If it's Trump and Hillary the liar, I vote for Trump. What's with the, you know... I don't even want to get into it. I don't. I'm enjoying what he's doing, and he really is getting people more into voting. Don't you think?
I think he's creating an awareness and an interest that probably wouldn't have been there. I kind of like this stuff, but I wouldn't have watched the debates if he had not been an integral part of them, just because they tend to be boring.
Really? I didn't waste my time with the Democratic debate either.
I watched a lot of it, and it was very lackluster.
That's why you need Trump moderating the Democratic one, because then that'd get heated up.
You get fireworks.
All right, Joe, you might be our last call on this for now. What do you think?
Well, I honestly feel that Trump is a moron and an idiot, and people who think that he's good for this country are morons and idiots as well. He hasn't spoken about one thing that he's actually going to do. I mean, he says what he's going to do, but he never tells anyone how he's going to do it or where the money is going to come from. And if people in this country waste their vote on an idiot like him, then they deserve exactly what they get. And I'm sure it's going to be a lot that they don't want.
Well, he tells you how the ends to the means. Like if he says, I'm going to build a wall between us and Mexico, he then explains the money will come from Mexico. He will charge them for the wall. But realistically, that's impossible.
Right, exactly.
And the good businessman, didn't he have companies go bankrupt?
Yes, he did. And that's what I was also going to say about that last caller, not the last caller, but the one fellow that was saying that he runs a good business. He's filed bankruptcy two or three times that I believe I know of.
In a lot of those business cases, what would happen, we talked about this a little bit a week or so ago, he would lend his name to companies. We talked about the casino that was in Indiana that went belly up. So after he stopped owning it, his name was still on it, and that's when it filed for bankruptcy. That's been the case with several of his businesses. He's been an extremely successful business guy. He really has. His real estate empire is extraordinary. But that doesn't mean you can run the country. It's so different.
Right. And I mean, I honestly would be afraid if he were to become the president of the United States, we'd probably be in World War III before he was a year into it.
Yikes.
Well, if you watch
the
X-Files last night, it looks like that's happening anyway.
Despite, no matter who's president.
Just to get it going. I mean, that's the way he is.
Joe, thanks. Appreciate the call.
I appreciate it. And some texters said, you know, we need a president because, you know, there has been some problems with people's perception of how Barack Obama handled ISIS. And he had said that they underestimated him. And that's the big thing I'm hearing is people saying, you know, Barack Obama is too soft. You know, we're a country of wussies. We have to, you know, stand up for what's right. And that's what it appears that Trump is going to do, although he hasn't really said how he's going to do it.
Right.
But somebody said we should just, you know, they want to vote for a president who is like Harrison Ford in Air Force One, where he just doesn't put up with people and he just says,
"Get off my plane."
So we need someone tougher maybe than Obama, but not as crazy as Donald Trump.
All right. All right. Let's do this. A break, some news, more show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. For a long time, whenever Steve Dale would be on the show, I would call him noted pet expert Steve Dale, and then Eric Zorn got jealous. He was so jealous. He called us up one day. He was crying. I said, "What's wrong, Eric?" He said, "I want an adjective. Why can't you describe me with an adjective?" So we said, "If you provide the adjectives, we'll provide the introduction." Here before us, Wendy, the radiant Tribune columnist Eric Zorn. Hi, radiant Eric.
Hi. Thanks for that, too, by the way. Crying was probably a bit over the top. No. I probably shouldn't have done that. I was playing on your emotions, but it worked.
Radiant people don't cry.
Right. They glow.
Right.
That's what they do. Let's start out, if you wouldn't mind, talking about Diana Rauner's story. She, of course, the wife of our governor, Bruce Rauner, and some interesting timing recently.
Well, yes. And when Bruce Rauner took over, he vowed that he was going to get rid of unnecessary government spending. And then almost immediately after that, he hired for his wife, Diana Rauner, a $100,000 person that they called her chief of staff, even though there is no staff for this person to be the chief of. It's just she's got a one-person staff.
What does she do?
Well, she oversees her scheduling, such as it is. You see, Diana Rauner works full-time. She's the head of the Ounce of Prevention Fund. It's a not-for-profit organization. But this will also help coordinate, or this chief of staff helped coordinate the rehab of the governor's mansion in Springfield. You know,
I could have helped them.
It fell into great disrepair, and to the Rauner's credit, they're having this done with private money. They've raised money to have it done, but the chief of staff is overseeing this. So this chief of staff, Sarah Wojcicki, she then was appointed to an empty state rep seat. So the position was vacant for a time. And then on Friday, kind of in that Friday afternoon news dump window, the governor announced a bunch of new hires, and one of them was the new chief of staff for
Mrs. Rauner. Yes,
and for Diana Rauner. Emily Bastedo is her name. She was an associate counsel in the governor's office, acting as a legal liaison for several agencies, and then now she is going to be the $100,000 a year chief of staff to Diana Rauner. And the thing is, like, $100,000, is not even a rounding error in terms of the financial problems we have in this state. There are lots of positions we could probably point to that are outrageous, that maybe even make more money than that. But the symbolism of it and the timing was just awful, because we're having serious budget problems. Also on Friday, as you guys probably heard, Lutheran Social Services of Illinois announced a very significant reduction in its workforce due to the fact that the state is not able to fund its programs. They're going to be cutting 30 programs. They're going to be eliminating 750 positions. And so estimated 4,700 people who get services from LSSI are not going to be getting them, which is really this budget crisis, this state financial crisis, really coming home to roost in a big way. Now, we've had some issues, right, with college students who get these MAP grants, the grants for low-income students, not getting those grants and not being able to go back to school. It's not like this has been a completely painless problem, but this is suddenly, we're sort of starting to turn the corner now in a place where agencies, programs are really running out of money. And the pain is going, is really being felt. So at this time for the governor's office to appoint.
Yeah, timing's someone terrible.
Whose job is still kind of, I mean, he's talking, when he said, I could do that. Yeah, okay, so you're overseeing the rehab of the mansion. I'm sure that's not nothing. You know, you got to get the right roofers and the right.
Yeah, but I mean.
You know, tapers and all the things that you do to do a rehab job.
It's definitely an important job, but I mean. I could do that for less.
You would think they could find somebody somehow to do it for less than $100,000.
Like a general contractor kind of thing, but it also seems like a strange.
The timing
place.
Is really
well.
Awkward.
It's also, you know, why would you have the first lady's chief of staff be in charge of? You think you'd want someone who is in contracting, who really knows,
yes.
You know, what's going on there. Diana Rauner does not have a particularly high profile as first lady. She's
right.
She's busy. She's doing her own job. She doesn't do a lot of public appearances, and even if she did. You would think that the governor's press office could handle the limited scheduling problems that would impose.
But. Do the first ladies in other states have a similar job? Is there somebody who serves as chief of staff for the first ladies of other states?
I think that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. Obviously, the first lady of the United States has a staff, bigger staff than one person.
Yeah,
I am the second person of second lady of.
Oh, you are. I didn't realize that.
Of Illinois.
Oh.
You're the second lady.
Yes, I just want to
So you have a $50,000.
Yes.
And you have a staff infection, but you do not have a staff.
Well, the interesting thing about...
You're lucky I like you, really.
The interesting thing about this is that the first lady, of course, is an unelected person. She's
right.
A citizen,
right.
A citizen, not an elected, but not even a government employee.
Yeah.
We got along fine, I guess, in Illinois without a first lady when Pat Quinn was governor. He's a bachelor.
Yeah.
He had a significant other, but she didn't play a prominent role at all. I think Patty Blagojevich may have had a scheduler. It's unclear. Brenda Edgar before that.
But you could get on your – there's an app on your phone for scheduling things.
You would think.
Right?
Yes, you would think.
And that's less than $100,000 a year.
And well, I mean, again, it's not as though the person wouldn't have anything to do, and it's not as though it's a terrible thing. It's just that the symbolism is all wrong.
Yeah.
Yep.
We don't have money. We don't have money. We need money for that, though, so there's some money.
Right. And, of course, his vow, Governor Rauner's vow, he was going to get rid of all unnecessary spending. He was going to be really flinty about that.
Yeah.
This just seems like just a
In his opinion, what's unnecessary.
Yeah.
That's what it's sounding like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And of course, it came one day after this very strange, bizarre press conference that he had. Did you guys follow this
mm-hmm.
at all? Where he comes out and he says, President Cullerton and I, comes out in the morning on Thursday morning, President Cullerton and I, John Cullerton of the Senate, a Democrat, have come to an agreement about a limited form of pension changes that we're going to impose. They're going to save us $1 billion a year. And again, $1 billion a year sounds like a lot, but our unfunded pension liability is somewhere north of $100 billion a year.
Wow.
Jeez.
So saving $100 billion, you got to start somewhere. And it was interesting because it seemed to us in the newsroom like, wow, this is a pretty interesting development because this is a plan that President Cullerton had been advancing without a whole lot of success for a while.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a little complicated, but it says essentially like if you're making, say you're making $50,000 or say you're making $100,000 a year, you're a real important chief of staff. So you're making $100,000 a year. There is a deal. And one of the crippling things about the pension deal in Illinois is that after you retire, you get a 3% compounded cost of living increase. And that actually adds up really quickly because suddenly, you know, you start off with $100,000, you get $103,000, and then you get 3% of $103,000.
So every year it goes up 3%?
It goes up 3%, but
oh,
it's compounded
wow.
on the previous number. So that's
not every employee is guaranteed a 3% living wage increase.
A working employee
yeah.
isn't allowed that. So anyway, and this is one of the big cost drivers. It's one of the big reasons that our pension liability, future liability, is so large. Anyway, I mean, I don't want to make this too many numbers because I promised Bill there would be no math.
I get confused.
I did hear the plan though, and it did seem to make some sense.
It says basically either you can get this compounded thing going forward. It says starting right now, you can give you raises, but your raises won't count against your pensionable salary. Your salary for pension purposes is frozen.
Yeah.
Or you can keep. You're compounded.
It's like, let's make a deal.
But not
the lovely Carol Merrill is standing in front of.
So in any case, it was sort of a complicated deal, but the way Rauner presented it, he didn't have Cullerton with him while he made the announcement, which made everybody go, wait a minute, if this is like a joint announcement, where is Cullerton? And he framed it in terms of saying that, well, and this means, of course, that from going forward, these people cannot collectively bargain on their wages. And this was either a misstatement or a misunderstanding by the governor as to what was actually in Cullerton's proposal. But Cullerton then fires back. Suddenly this big, you know, group hug deal falls apart.
Oh.
And it was widely seen as an unforced error by Rauner, that it was just he bungled that rollout.
Yeah.
And it may be that they can get back on the same page, but it was so coming the day after that. And of course we're 2 days away now from the State of the State speech.
Yeah.
The State of the State is pretty bad right now.
Terrible.
Yep.
And there's a lot of blame for that to go around, of course. But you know, a year ago, a little bit more than a year ago, when he was inaugurated, Rauner, you know, seemed to say, well, I'm going to right the ship. I'm going to shake things up. I'm going to get things done. And so far, it's basically been a year of squabbling and bickering.
More frustration.
As the unpaid bills mount up.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And so it's an interesting time.
Eric Zorn is here. He's radiant, but you already knew that he'd be radiant. That's no surprise to anybody. Stick around. We've got more coming your way in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Eric Zorn is here. The Radiant Tribune columnist, Eric Zorn, sitting right over there.
Radiating.
You are radiating. You're like a radiator. The National Review. Let's talk about the National Review.
They came out with a special edition at the end of last week, essentially arguing that Donald Trump is not a fitting representative of the conservative cause and that they need to all get together and marshal their forces and block him as being inauthentic and not smart enough and not good enough, not pure enough in his fealty to
What are issues. The chances of that happening?
Of them blocking him?
Yeah.
I don't think they're very good right now.
Yeah.
It looks like the polls have shown that, you know, he suffered a dip against Cruz in Iowa, but he seems to be surging again in Iowa. Part of it, I think, based on this contention that keeps coming up that Cruz is not a natural born American citizen because he was
Seriously.
Born in Canada.
That's what he's going on again.
Wendy hates this, but I think it's bothering some voters who might want to support Trump. One of the interesting things about this is that, you know, claiming that Trump is not a serious person, not a serious candidate. A lot of these people from the National Review are the same ones who were defending Sarah Palin so staunchly 8 years ago. Like she was a fitting vice president. John McCain had made a good choice, and it to me the irony is very rich in that they can't. They're more willing to throw Trump overboard, but they weren't willing to throw Sarah Palin overboard, and now they're. You know, joined at the hip, of course.
What about the talk? There's been a lot of conjecture that New York's former mayor, Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, might enter the race as an independent. What does that do if he jumps in? Does that go?
If Hillary doesn't win the nomination, isn't that what his stipulation
was? I think that's what he's looking at. He's looking at the fact that if the Democrats nominate Bernie Sanders and the Republicans nominate either Ted Cruz or Donald Trump, that you will have candidates that are really on the far opposite fringes of their parties.
Yeah.
And so the public will be looking for someone to sort of come in and
someone in the middle.
Well, Bloomberg has been a Democrat. He's been a Republican. He's now an independent. He's, you know, obviously very, very wealthy. He could self-fund his
But wouldn't own, the opponents play what you just said? Wouldn't that be exactly what they'd play against? They go, here's a guy who can't make up his mind about anything. Is he a Republican? Is he a Democrat? Is he an independent?
Well, the thing is they're counting on that the voting public is fundamentally moderate, that there's a sort of a moderate streak in that we don't like people on the extremes. The base voters in the parties do like them, but that most people are kind of in the middle. Some are like, oh, I'm a little, you know, the swing voters. People say, well, I like some of the economic plans of the Republicans. I kind of like the social views of the Democrats, so I'm persuadable. And he's counting on those people kind of people going down. I mean, he's because Bloomberg is socially liberal. He was the mayor of New York.
Right.
He couldn't be socially conservative and be the mayor of New York, economically somewhat conservative. So he would be planning on that. The record for third-party candidates in this country is not great. And, you know, Ross Perot was kind of the voice of anger, the voice of rebellion. If you remember when he ran, was it 92, I think, was when he made his most prominent run. I think he maybe ran again 4 years after that. 92 was Clinton Bush. Clinton and Bush were very moderate. You know, Clinton was a moderate Democrat, and Bush was a moderate, the first Bush was a moderate mm-hmm. Republican. So in came Ross Perot, the voice of anger, and so on. He was the one who was going to attract all those voters. Now you have a situation where, in a sense, you've got two Ross Perots. If Bernie Sanders is nominated, you've got the Ross Perot of the right, the Ross Perot of the left, all expressing the anger of the public, and then you'd have someone coming in going, now, everybody, the adults in the room, I'm going to be. So I don't, you know, could Michael Bloomberg, he could take votes away from Sanders, he could take votes away from, you know, Trump or Cruz.
See, that's what I'm trying to figure out is, who does he detract from? I know he's pulling votes from somebody. Is it both parties? Would he get votes from both?
I'm sure he would. Well, Trump right now is getting votes from both parties. This is one of the untold stories of this caucus in Iowa, and particularly the polling shows that there are people who are Democrats, lifelong Democrats, who are really resonating with his message of anger and rebellion.
I know some of those.
And they feel, yes, and they feel like this guy is telling it like it is.
And you got to shake it up, and we got to move away from politicians.
Right. And of course, Bernie Sanders is appealing to a whole different crowd of people who are also very angry. It's going to be interesting who he pulls votes from. What happens, though, if you remember your civics class, is if this election splits three ways, and so say Bloomberg carries like New England states, and then the Republican candidate carries the southern states, and the Democrat carries most of the Midwest, say, you end up throwing the election to the House of Representatives, which is Republican.
Would certainly
remain Republican, and they would choose a Republican, or maybe they would choose somebody brand new. I don't know.
They couldn't choose Trump. Could you see them having to make that choice?
I'm not sure what latitude they have. Maybe they can choose anybody. I'm now forgetting my
Even civics. Somebody who's not in the running, they could pick out a name and just go, this is our choice for president.
I think they could.
Live with it.
Bryan Cranston.
Well,
he's always good.
I do enjoy
Bryan Cranston.
But, you know, of course, the other possibility is they would pick someone like Paul Ryan, who I keep thinking the Republicans may try to settle on Paul Ryan. If their whole primary caucus situation is as crazy and crowded and nutty as we think it's going to be, there may not emerge from the process someone with enough votes at the convention to get the nomination, in which case they would throw open the convention to anyone who might, and they might go back to Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan.
Do you remember when you asked us to come up with our predictions for the year, and I jokingly said that Sarah Palin would be Donald Trump's running mate?
You did, and I laughed at you, and I'm not laughing anymore.
Is that a possibility?
I don't think so, because I think he's smart enough to know that she's not smart enough to be.
Yeah.
But he might dangle that possibility out for quite a while, because people like her. I wanted to like her,
and then I really did at the beginning. I was telling Bill I liked she was spunky. She was.
I hate spunk.
Be the answer, Lou Grant.
That'll never be one of your adjectives. But I just thought she was cool. She was she wasn't prissy. She was like a woman I could see, wow, she might be it. And then I started listening to her talk, and boy, did I have a different opinion.
Oh, man, it was bad, wasn't it?
She's like Mrs. Loupner from Saturday Night Live, you know? All right, Eric, thank you. We appreciate it. It's Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. Read him every chance you get. We'll take a quick break and then find out what Steve has on the Wintrust business lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, thanks. Hi, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy.
You and Kevin are discoing.
Yeah, it's hard not to. It's impossible not to. It's us, Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder. If you want to call in, 312-981-7200. Kim, I have to ask you a question. I was complaining to Wendy a short time ago about the fact that in this past year, 2015, there wasn't a single movie that I've seen that wowed me. There were no 4-star movies, nothing that blew me out of the water. That changed this weekend because I saw The Revenant, and that was the best movie. Now, you had said you saw it a couple weeks ago, but didn't want to
give... Kim said a very weird thing on the air, and she wouldn't reveal it.
Well, I said I wanted to be neutral till you guys saw it.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
But that's
okay. Bill, you saw it?
I loved it.
Oh, I hated it.
Did you hate it, really?
I did.
Because why? Any special reason?
I just thought it was really gory, really long, really dragged out. I mean, I can see why Leonardo DiCaprio could possibly win, an Academy Award for it, and it'll probably win all kinds of awards. It's just not my kind of movie.
It beat Star Wars for golly.
Something finally took Star Wars down.
It's just not my cup of tea.
It's not for everybody.
No.
As I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, because I saw it with my wife, and one of my daughters had seen it and loved it, but the other one didn't. She wasn't interested in the storyline or anything, and I know she would have hated it. I'm positive she would have hated
it. Because there's been some rumors that animals have been harmed.
Well, when Kylie saw the movie, she said to me, when you see it, watch for this. And she mentioned a couple scenes in the movie. And she said, there's no way they could have done that without this animal being hurt or this animal being hurt. And she said, at the end of the movie, you know, they always post that thing that says no animals were harmed in the making of this film. She goes, I didn't see that.
They can't harm a movie. They can't harm an animal.
I don't think so either.
And everything is so computer generated now that even though it looks real, I mean, it's a movie. Look at this Star Wars movie. They weren't really in space.
What?
Sorry to
That's
wreck
not
it.
True.
Spoiler alert.
They were in space. but there's a couple scenes in there where I can't figure out, and this happens. Did you see the movie The Life of Pi a couple years ago about the kid in the boat, and he's got a bunch of animals in the boat? I don't know how they did that, because it really looked like there were animals fighting in a little boat.
You watch The Walking Dead, Bill.
I know.
It looks real. It's not.
I know. I know it's not real. But it was very convincing.
Especially with this being up for an award, do you think that that could even happen?
Oh, no. There'd be animal rights groups all over them if they even came close to harming an animal. But boy, it sure looks. There's a couple scenes where you go, oh, wait a minute. How did they do that? Now, Kim, there's a scene in the movie I want to ask you about. And
okay.
I don't need
is
to say spoiler alert. No, because it's not. It's in no way advancing the storyline. There's a scene, the whole movie takes place in the wilderness, and there's this one scene where, like, there's this streak of fire in the sky. What was that all about?
I don't know
what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
I can't figure out what that, if it meant
aliens
something.
Aliens, crossover into the X-Files.
You think it was aliens?
It was to promote that X-Files is
for
bad.
French fur traders.
Right, right.
I think I'm probably in the minority on this. I think most people probably loved it. It's just not my kind of. It was just not my kind of movie.
You know what? There's never been a movie ever that everyone has liked or disliked. There's always going to be some back and forth as to whether or not it was good. The movie. The reason I didn't want to see it is the guy that directed The Revenant is the same guy that directed the movie last year with Michael Keaton.
Birdman,
which I did Batman. Not see, but I heard was also very strange.
I couldn't stand that movie.
You didn't hate it. Now, all of a sudden, it's turned to hate it. First, you're like, I didn't care for it. Now you hate it and despise it as much as the Bears.
I think what happens is, like, when I saw it, it didn't do anything for me, and I kept wanting it. Like, at the five-minute mark, I go, okay, enough of this already. And that was five minutes in.
I liked it. I liked it. But it left me unfulfilled, as I told you.
No, I get that. I understand that. But wasn't Birdman a movie that was in love with itself?
Yes.
Didn't you feel that all throughout?
And this is the same director who did...
Same guy.
The Remnant, as you used to call it.
The Remnant.
But if you saw the Golden Globes, there were all you can see that they were also kind of in love with themselves. About this movie.
But that's Hollywood.
Yeah.
They're all
no
in love
question.
With themselves.
I'm boycotting Hollywood, not
You're
the Academy Awards.
You're going to boycott Hollywood?
Just Hollywood.
Oh, my son lived there. Don't boycott.
Lived.
You can't.
Not there now, right?
No, he is. He's
oh,
there.
Oh, oh, oh. Is One he in the business?
Yes, he is.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Getting wrote, to know Kim
he,
Gordon's
he
son
He wrote
later.
The Revenant, which is so weird right. that Kim
which
hates
is why
it.
I hate it. Can you believe it?
I could see you doing that, though. You know, like, honey, I know you're my son, and I know you made this great movie, but I didn't much care for it. Why would you lie? Kim doesn't sugarcoat things.
Never.
That's why we like her.
But I felt so good because it's the first time, and there were some movies that I liked a lot. I liked The Martian a lot.
Although,
I liked,
tell the behind-the-scenes story of The Martian when we were talking to the 13th hottest scientist in all the land.
Lucian Walkowitz. There were a couple of scenes in the movie that it disturbed me. It took me out of the movie because even though I loved the story, I loved the characters, Matt Damon was great, everybody was great, there were a couple of things that happened in the movie that... Even though I'm not a scientist, I kept thinking, "Oh, that's fake. They wouldn't have done that."
And you brought up a particular one, which shall remain nameless. And what did
it's
Lucienne
called the
say?
Slingshot effect. And if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm referring to. If you haven't, see
Spoiler
The Martian.
Alert.
It's good, but they use a technique called the slingshot effect. And I thought that's not. They wouldn't do that. That's,
what did she say, Bill?
She goes, "That's real. They really have that." I don't know.
It's a movie anyway. It's supposed
right.
to suspend belief.
I know. And I, for some reason, I almost always have that element. I know when I'm seeing a movie, I know it's just, it's guys pretending. It's not really happening. But in that movie, for some reason, that just took me out of it. And I don't know what it is.
I don't know. If Lucienne says it, I'm just going to believe it.
Then you believe it.
Yeah.
Right. I get that.
All right. Can someone saying what the streak of fire was, and I don't know. Is this going to ruin stuff? I can't do this.
Maybe should I read it privately and then know if we can say it or not?
Well, now I already know there's a streak of fire. That's ruined the movie for me.
No, there's nothing about the streak of fire that could possibly ruin the movie. Hold on, let me see what it says. All right, they just say that the streak of fire is either a volcanic eruption or a meteor.
I could have guessed that,
that
too.
That won't, yeah, but that
I
won't
I said
affect.
Aliens.
It can't be any of those things. I don't know what it is. And that by far is not an integral part of the movie. It's just this one scene that I go, well, that's weird. What's going on there?
Bill, the stranger meteor was also in Birdman.
Oh.
Is that like his
so maybe in
Easter
every,
egg?
You know how Alfred Hitchcock just shows up in every one of his movies? Maybe this guy just puts a streak of fire in the sky in every movie.
What's his name? Something Meteor or something Fire?
Yeah, Jimmy Meteor. That's his signature.
773 says, Revenant, one of the best movies I have ever seen. Leo was beyond amazing. It was all filmed in natural light and environment. No computer-esque going on, Wendy. Well, then, sorry.
There has to be some.
For the animals.
There has to be some.
They ain't eating no animals, because I'm telling you, I'll get PETA on the phone. I will. It will sweep the Oscars, says 773.
I'm not sure it'll sweep the Oscars, but I think, and Kim said this perfectly, you'll either buy into this or you won't. You know, there's some people who will see a movie like this, and I'm like this with movies, too. And so is Dolly.
Oh, God.
There's just some movies where you just, like, you're
is
right.
She going back to the concession stand again.
Yes. More snow caps. So you'll either play into it and go, yeah, this movie has captured me, or you'll just go, there's nothing in this movie for me. But in this one, like right from the beginning, do you know who Tom Hardy is? He's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in Mad Max. He was Bane in a Batman movie. This guy plays such a great villain, and he plays a good hero too. He's a hero in Mad Max, but as a bad guy, I would not want Tom Hardy on the opposite side of me in anything.
224 says they used the slingshot effect around the moon to get Apollo 13 back to Earth. It is real.
I think Lucy used that. Lucienne used that.
Oh, now it's Lucy? I think something else.
I think Lulu used that same exact analogy when she was on with us. Yeah.
630 saw The Revenant like no movie I have ever seen. Loved it.
It really does. Like, when it's over, you feel worn out.
That's how I felt after Natural Born Killers.
You know that feeling, right?
I was spent, and I wanted to go out and kill someone.
I would hope it wouldn't make you that extreme. I would hope you'd realize it's just a movie.
But I do get what you mean by that.
There's a couple movies that when the movie's over...
Exhausted.
And Revenant is one of them. When that movie was over, we just sat there. It's like, wow. I mean, we didn't go through what DiCaprio's character went through, but you just... It's a day. You really spent some time with it.
Someone says, watch The Walk, fascinating movie with unbelievable visuals based on a true story.
Right.
I know nothing about
that.
The,
yeah, you do. It's the French guy who walked across the towers in New York.
You're right. You loved that too, didn't you?
I saw the documentary about it. I didn't see the movie version of it. But yeah, his story is really interesting. It's strange that, because every once in a while a movie comes out and you go, that's the kind of movie that the Academy Awards loves. And that was one of them, and it just got nothing. It didn't do well at the box office, despite a great story. And Joseph Gordon, right?
I love
him. He's the lead in it.
Crush. Him and Seth Rogen, my two crushes. What's wrong with me?
I don't know. All right, a quick break. More show coming your way next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
And coming up on this very show, we're going to talk a little weather, because some big stuff falling down in New York, in Washington, D.C., in West Virginia, I think, was the worst, with 40 inches, I think Steve Bertrand said.
Did you watch a little of the coverage of it on any of the cable news networks over the weekend?
You know what? I didn't. I was reading about it on AP and saw this meteorologist and winter weather expert, Paul Kosin, who we're going to talk to at 1:35 today after the 1:30 news. It was rumored to be one of the top 10 storms of all times, and now this guy is, Paul Kosin is saying it's definitely top 5, definitely up there.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole city, do you remember last year, was it last year that there was some blizzard coming to New York and they stopped all the public transportation, and then there were like 2 inches of snow?
Right, it wasn't much at all.
But wouldn't you, as a city official, heed what the weather forecasters are saying? Isn't it better to be safe than sorry?
Yeah, it seems like the right thing to do. They were talking about the difference of it taking place on a weekend as opposed to a weekday, and how their tactics had to be a little bit different to prepare for it. We've had that happen a little bit here when we know that there's going to be a torrential storm of any kind. You know,
I'd rather
we'll get
be overly prepared and have it fizzle out. Plus, you know, we've talked to Tom Skilling about this many times. It's like, patterns change.
Sure.
So what's forecasted, you know, it's a near miss.
Right, right. But I know there was some criticism on the East Coast a little bit as to everything that shut down. They talked about it a little bit on Saturday Night Live. They said everything closed down in the city except for us. We're the only ones open.
But everything did pretty much
close
down.
Broadway shows closed down. Public transportation closed down. Restaurants were closed. They were trying to figure out, early this morning, they were trying to figure out the approximate cost of this to some of the cities. And I don't know how you tabulate something like that. I mean, it's all speculative. I don't know how you come up with a definitive number, but it's millions and millions and millions of dollars just because of a couple of days of snow. But that's how dangerous it was. They lost some lives.
It looks so cool on TV, though.
It looks beautiful on TV.
You know, people just running around giddy in Times Square.
Yeah.
Where, you know, cars would have been going up and down Broadway. It was just a pedestrian area.
Yeah, it does. It looks so strange. It looks like artwork almost. You know, how could there not be any people there and cars and stuff? Where did everything go?
There were some tips for how to handle the pizza delivery people during the blizzard. Things to remember when you order delivery in a blizzard, which is something we may face someday. Do you care about
sure.
these? Avoid being a blizzard blockhead during the storm. This is from Gothamist.com. Throw money at delivery folks. Not literally, of course, but you're paying the incredible convenience of not having to venture into Hoth.
The ice planet from Star Wars.
Calculate the amount for a proper 20% tip, then add on multiple extra dollars, which is weird because, I mean, do you always tip $20 when you get delivery? I mean, 20%? I sure don't.
We're right around there.
You are?
Yeah, we're right around there.
You and get a pizza and your order is $25.
Yeah, you're going to... $5. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we're right around there. And we have jacked it up under extreme weather conditions. There's been a few times over the years that the weather's been incredibly tough to travel in, and you know it. I mean, on a day like that, you go, all right, what's a couple extra dollars? This guy risked his life to bring me pizza.
What, did they walk to deliver pizzas?
No, but just, you know, with the driving that tough.
No one was driving. Tip and cash. Have a little patience. No, a lot of patience.
Yeah.
It's not just the entire city will be thinking delivery. They don't make chains for bicycles, meaning some serious legwork is involved to clear a path. It's going to take a lot longer than usual. I wonder if Jimmy John still had their speedy delivery.
Yeah, but
Freaky
speedy
fast.
Under those days meant 3 hours.
And consider meeting them downstairs. Live on a fifth floor walk up. You've been doing nothing all day but binge watching Making
sense.
A Murderer. So.
Yeah.
Walk downstairs and help them.
Why not? Why not? Do you remember much of the snowstorm of 67 here? Do you remember much of it?
Yeah. I was young, but I remember the piles of snow that were plowed looked like Mount Everest.
Yeah.
And
didn't they?
In comparison to how little I was.
Yeah.
And sure as hell, we climbed up them and fell down them. But I totally remember that.
How did 67 compare to 79? Because
I remember that one.
I remember that one.
I had started drinking by then.
Well, there's your difference then.
No, but one as a little kid, you remember it. I really remember that as like a momentous occasion.
Oh, yeah. See, that's my theory. The memory keepers.
Yeah.
67 is their wheelhouse. But I feel like 79 was the
worst. Just as bad or enough.
I mean, the wind was much stronger where I was from in a more rural area. We had snowdrifts that went up to the roof lines of houses.
Well, in 67, we lived in an apartment, and we lived on the second floor of the apartment, and out my bedroom window, it looked like we were on the first floor because of the snowdrift. Suddenly, we were on the first floor.
I don't remember the blizzard of 79.
Oh, it was terrible. It was awful.
I was in high school, so like I said, I had other things on my mind.
Yeah.
I wasn't out making snow angels and building a fort, at least not in the snow.
It's the one that brought Mayor Blandick down.
Right? It is.
Yeah. Oh, I do remember that
one,
because
of the way they didn't treat the snow.
Right.
All right, let's do this. Speaking of snow, we'll take a quick break. Steve with the news, and then we'll talk to meteorologist who will explain everything that went on the East Coast. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, well, thankfully we didn't get the weather, because on Friday when we were leaving, there were predictions of a crazy blizzard with hurricane-type winds that was going to hit the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly happened. Paul Kosin is on the line with us, meteorologist and winter weather for NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. I always wondered what NOAA stood for, so now we know, Paul.
I'm doing just fine. It's a lot easier today.
It is. We are lucky. We dodged a bullet. We were nowhere near it, but I was reading, found your name on Associated Press, had all these weather alerts that were talking about just the terrible storm that was going on. And what was the worst of it? Was it West Virginia that had 40 inches? Am I correct in that?
Well, yeah, luckily they have the largest numbers, but basically the entire area from the Washington, D.C. to New York area, which is home to 40 to 60 million people, all of those areas experienced 20 inches or more of snow with high winds. So you had a big chunk of the U.S. population that was really hunkering down for a very high-impact storm.
And what about these winds? Were they really registering as high as hurricane winds in addition to the snow coming down?
Well, not in all locations. There were some locations, especially along the Virginia, Maryland, and Jersey shores, up and across southeast New England, the winds were gusting pretty close to hurricane force. But in general, winds were gusting with the snow from about 40 to 50, maybe even 60 miles per hour. That's plenty enough to combine with the snow and wind to create blizzard or near blizzard conditions.
Paul, how accurate was the predicting on the snowstorm? And again, this is technology that continues to get better and better. It's never going to be 100%, but they kind of knew what was coming. There were no major surprises in terms of the snowfall, was there? Were there?
No. As far as the storm itself, we knew pretty consistently from about a week ago that the storm was coming. And a lot of times what we use are models, and they can flip back and forth. This one, they were consistent from day one. But there certainly were areas, not every area is just as easy to predict as some other areas. For example, Washington, they're right in the thick of it, whether the models went north, the models went south, Washington is in the middle of it. It's a different story in New York. There was a very sharp difference between very, very heavy snow and north snow and no snow. That we knew was going to be around New York. We didn't know whether it was going to be just north or just south. That has a huge implication. Turns out it was just north of New York, putting New York right in the bullseye, while areas like Poughkeepsie, New York, just 30 or 40 miles or 50 miles north, had not a flake at all.
Where were you during this storm, Paul?
I was at work in Washington, sleeping overnight at the National Centers for Environmental Prediction. We had to sort of hunker down in place because we had to get to work, and if we don't get to work, we don't get paid, and you could get fired, so... That's where we stay.
All right. Now, you we're talking to Paul Kosin, meteorologist and winter weather expert for NOAA.
I kind of know my stuff when it comes to East Coast weather, friends. I'll take it.
A weather forecaster. Oh, okay. And now you're also an author. You have a couple of books, Northeast Snowstorms, Volume 1 and 2. You can get them on Amazon. Here's my question to you. How does this rate? I know that someone said it was going to be in the top 10 storms, but it worked its way up closer to the top 5, correct?
Correct. We actually compute a scale called the Northeast Snowfall Impact Scale. It rates these storms on a 1 to 5 range based on how much snow over how large an area and how many people affected. Right now, there are only two storms that score in the top two category. They're the March 93 blizzard and blizzard of January 96. This storm, both storms rank as a category 5. This one will likely rank as a category 4 simply because it drops a tremendous amount of snow but over a slightly smaller area and affected slightly fewer amount of people. That probably puts it within the top 5 or 10 massive storms that have occurred over the last 50 to 100 years. So that's looking at a pretty long record in an area that gets some pretty large snowstorms.
Does it matter that this spanned a little bigger? Because it also went, I know that there was a huge backup on, was it I-70 in Kentucky?
All of these factors taken into account. Matter of fact, how people respond to the forecast, how the public, public managers, emergency managers get the information out. All of this information actually plays into how well people get the message that this storm is on the way, so people don't get surprised. They're like, hey, where was I? I didn't know this was coming. Well, if you didn't know this storm was actually coming, there's, I don't know what you were listening to.
Paul, when a major city closes down, when they say, look, we've got a travel ban, you can't go anywhere, we're closing down public transportation, you know it's serious, right? They're not messing around.
Oh, this is, like I said, with certain other storms, these storms do not occur frequently. They only occur sometimes once every few years, but when they do occur, their impact is major. They affect tens of millions of people who are inconvenienced. They can't go out. They can't really do much of anything. So the impact is absolutely huge. The good news is that, you know, it doesn't happen very often. And in this particular case, the forecasts were in general right on for a week in advance. That's extremely helpful.
Now, where are you now? We're hearing a lot of background noise. I'm sure there's still a lot going on.
Right. I'm actually in Pete's Coffee in downtown Washington, D.C. It's very quiet. I'm just having a hot cocoa, which I'd recommend a lot of other people to do.
Sure.
They're still digging out. The temperature's nice. It's a wonderful day for a walk. And there aren't a lot of cars, so I'm having a great time.
All right, now what about the flooding? Before we let you go, Paul Kosin on the line with us, meteorologist and winter weather forecaster for NOAA. What's going to happen now with all the snow melting? Are people going to be flooded? Is that the fear now?
Well, that all depends. Usually flooding becomes a big concern if there's a very warm rainstorm soon after. Right now, that doesn't appear to be the case, but we still don't know that yet, because back in January 1996, 2 weeks after a humongous storm, Blizzard of 96, there was this incredible melt and flood with this heavy, warm rainstorm. If that doesn't occur, the snow will likely disappear more slowly, gradually. That would be the good news. So that's just something to watch over the next few weeks. If you would dodge a bullet, if there isn't a situation like that develops, and then most of the stuff will just probably kind of melt on its own and hopefully cause no more inconvenience.
Has every state in the United States had snow at some point?
Turns out that's actually true. Even Hawaii, because they have 13,000-foot mountains, and Florida on occasion, the farthest south it's ever occurred, it has snowed in the Miami area back in 1977 and a couple of times, so yes, every state. However, the big storms generally confined further north. You don't get the big snows in Miami. You don't get the big snows in Los Angeles or San Francisco, but a lot of the other major cities are prone to some of these events.
You saw all the white powder in Scarface, Wendy. It snows in Miami.
True. That's true.
That's a different kind of white powder.
Oh, okay.
All right, and what's the forecast now for the Northeast at this point?
It's good for the time being, though there is some question. There is a system that does not appear right now to be quite as predictable for Friday. We don't know whether that system will stay offshore, will come closer to the coast. Right now, there's a little hedge towards it not being a big deal, but I'm not being a betting man. Most meteorologists are not taking their eyes off of it, but they certainly don't want to hype it up if they're not as confident as we were worth it.
Well, thank you so much for shedding some light on this, and whipped cream and the hot chocolate at Pete's Coffee.
The hot chocolate, I'm going to keep drinking it, and then I'm going to the movies.
Yep, live it up. Do what you can. Yeah, well, thank you, Paul.
I'm off.
Thank you so much. Yeah, his work is done.
Paul Kosin calling from an igloo somewhere.
I know, that's what it sounded
across
like.
Across the country.
Sorry, you had to listen very carefully to hear that, and I wanted to talk more to him, but there's just
no way. It sounded
a
little muffled, just a little.
But so what we took from this is, you know, if they have a gradual warming, everybody's going to be okay, but seriously,
sure,
if all
it's
of
fast,
a, yeah.
Then you get flooding. That's
big
it.
Time. Somebody was saying, we were talking about the blizzards that were here,
mm-hmm.
and somebody said the big problem after the 79 blizzard was the deep freeze that fell on us after that. It was below zero, 32 degrees for 33 days. Someone who has sent us this text was a letter carrier then.
Ugh. Imagine being outside all day.
It was brutal. We had to put bike flags on our jeeps so we could be seen on side streets with 10 to 12 foot piles of snow on every corner.
I'd have picked a different color, but that's okay.
All right, a quick break and a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
A couple of texts that we would like to share.
Read them in a muffled voice, Wendy.
Well, that's what it pertains
to. Please, read them
to.
In a muffled voice.
I don't know if you guys are connected by tin cans and a string, but this guy, who was Paul Kosin from the meteorology, from NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Yeah.
This guy sounds like Charlie Brown's mom.
Wop, 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 wop. It was very hard to understand him. But he's far away.
No, I'm sorry. I should have tried to call him back. And I heard him, but it really took all the concentration I had.
Right.
Someone wanted to know if he was at a McDonald's speaker.
It was Jack in the Box.
Right.
Right, because McDonald's has their whole speaker figured out.
Yeah.
You cannot understand this guy. He's got something going on with his connection and background noise.
Mm-hmm.
Pete's Coffee. And he said, that's the terrible thing, is he said it was very quiet there.
Yeah.
It was not, I just think when you're in a building sometimes on a cell phone, it doesn't always work.
Cell phone technology has been around for quite a while, and you would think by this point they would have it solved and you could get it. But I can't tell you how many times if I'm talking to somebody, sometimes I'll be talking to somebody who's like a half a block away on the cell phone, and you can't make out what they're saying.
I know, and there are certain spots with certain carriers where there's honestly like a dead zone.
Right.
There, with the carrier I use, every time I pass our 7-Eleven,
yeah,
I'm not even kidding. It's
what
like
happens?
Whomever I'm speaking to, you're breaking up, and then you get right past it, and everything's good. It's just there are definitely some spots. I have friends who cannot use their cell phone in their house.
In their own home. Because it
I'm
just
like, why
doesn't
don't you switch carriers?
What's
and
that
would that
all
make
about?
A difference?
Yeah, it would have to, right? It depends on whether...
I don't know. Don't they share all the cell towers?
I don't know.
I don't know how it works either, this technology.
The good news is you can use it as an excuse when you don't want to talk to somebody anymore. You can just explain to them that it's breaking up or just hang up on them and just say, I was in a dead zone.
Every time I talk to you, you say something like that.
I'm by your 7-Eleven. I opened up an office next door to your 7-Eleven. That's why.
What do you do in your office? Wouldn't that be fun?
Mostly just color.
Build blocks,
a lot
maybe?
Of colors and blocks and sticker fun. Yep. I don't know if we have time to fully discuss this, but I wanted to bring this up. There's a restaurant in Texas that is now giving a discount if you bring your gun into the restaurant. Did you know this?
Do they have a sign?
They do. People love this. The brisket at Brooks Place arrives with a deep smoky bark that the grill master refers to as black gold. The line outside the barbecue joint, like more than a trailer and a few picnic tables parked outside of an Ace Hardware in this Houston suburb, starts building by mid-morning, and customers only need to bring a solid appetite and a bit of time and a gun if you're looking for a discount. Out back, a generator hums rhythmically. This is very
well
written.
Not Outback Steakhouse.
No, it's not Outback Steakhouse. Although they have no rules there. You can bring a bomb in there if you want. There's no rules. Just
dance.
Right.
While bombing.
Right. A generator hums rhythmically, and oak logs are piled next to an upright barbecue pick. There are signs banning pets. You can't bring your dog or your cat. You can't wear shorts. You can't wear sagging pants. But you can bring a handgun. It says firearms are welcome.
Wait, to trade in?
No.
Food? Oh,
you just go to the place. You go to this barbecue place. Brooks Place.
I'm not going there.
You show them that you're packing. And they give you a 10% discount off your food. Well, you know what I mean. We felt a need to tell gun owners that you don't need to worry about being judged, says the owner, Trent Brooks, sitting near a sign that reads, "Thank you for carrying your gun today." They're very pleasant about it. Brooks is so gun-friendly that he affixed stickers to the walls of the trailer with pictures of targets saying, "Nothing inside worth dying for, and if you can read this, you're in range." He advertises concealed handgun classes on the restaurant's menu and a website and has offered numerous discounts to gun owners and first responders during his 7 years running what Texas Monthly rated among the 50 best barbecue joints worldwide. So it gets high accolades for its restaurant prowess. The food is supposed to be magnificent. But if you bring in a gun, you are offered anywhere between 10 to 25% discount depending on what's going on at the time.
That whatever that day's special is.
Yeah.
Gun du jour.
Brooks is offering currently a 25% discount to those who took advantage of the law, which took effect earlier this year. And he wants it, he says in the article, he goes on to say that he doesn't want it concealed. He wants people to see that you have a gun. He wants you to know that if you're there eating in his restaurant, nothing crazy is going to happen because most of the patrons there are packing heat. And if there's trouble, they'll take care of it.
But I don't know about you, Bill, but I will get indigestion if I eat there. I could not sit there and have an enjoyable meal.
It'd be wouldn't it be?
I'd be, do you have my back? I'd be looking at you going, watch behind me, I'll watch behind you.
I know.
Because you know what? There's going to be some person who has had a bad day, and instead of yelling at you or flipping you off, he could shoot you.
They'll point at the gun and go, I need service. I need service now.
Again, I know people who are, you know, getting guns legitimately are fine people. But, you know, if you get in a fight with a table next to you,
it
escalates things a little bit.
You know how every once in a while there will be a little incident somewhere, just a small incident? If everyone has a gun on them, doesn't that incident become dangerous?
Yeah, because if I had marbles in my pocket and I got mad at somebody, I would whip marbles
at them. Whip a marble at their head. That's how it goes. That's how it should be.
Remember that game Marblehead?
Yeah, I do.
Was it actually called that?
It was called Marblehead.
It was the shape of a head, and you would stick your finger in the holes of the head. It was like a perforated flat head.
And marbles would come out.
And the goal was to get more marbles than your friend.
Yeah, you could play a human version of that at Brooks Place in Texas. You could do that while you're eating lunch, while you're having a barbecue.
You can bring guns, but no marbles.
Right.
I think that's
The funniest part is they're so adamant, and I'm not a pet guy, obviously, either, although I do wear short shorts and sagging pants on a daily basis. But there's signs that say, we prohibit pets, no short shorts, no sagging pants, but the handgun, perfectly welcome. Come on in, you'll save some money.
And that's good. Listen, we were talking about pets in restaurants and stuff, and I don't know that I enjoy that either. I mean, an outdoor cafe maybe is one thing.
Yeah.
But my dog, like my kids, they don't listen to me. So if Tiki starts barking at somebody, that's going to ruin somebody's dinner.
Right.
Plus, there's the hair issue.
And sometimes every once in a while, a pet will go to the bathroom at an inopportune moment.
No. Have you ever seen that?
I've heard stories. You don't want to see that while you're dining out in a restaurant. Wouldn't that slightly ruin the experience?
Yeah, especially if you were going to get the brownie pie a la mode for
especially
dessert.
Especially. A break, more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN, where we invite your calls or texts. We're at 312-981-7200.
All right, maybe I'm a little bit white trash because I like Molly Hatchet, I got to tell you.
All right.
Flirting with Disaster Baby. We
finally got you to admit it.
I'll openly admit it.
All right.
I like that Southern rock. Allman Brothers, Molly Hatchet. And I would honor what this texter said. Let me share it with you.
All right.
As long as she is not running for office, I love Sarah Palin. Wish I could tip a few with her, but God, what a nut job.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed.
Can we play a little of her, of Tina Fey's Sarah Palin on Saturday Night Live?
Mm-hmm. They did a parody of her endorsement of Donald Trump at the top of the show on Saturday.
And kind of his exasperation, you know, at first it was like, this is great. She's a great woman. And then it was like, oh, boy, she's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We will play that. You don't have it now, Kev, right? We'll do it later, just sometime today, because somebody texted us earlier, too, saying they couldn't tell if that was really her.
Steve said that.
I was listening to it. I didn't.
Oh.
I wasn't watching, and I was out in the other room or somewhere, and I'm just hearing the audio. And for the like 10 or 15 seconds where I really didn't know. And then she started quoting Lorax or Thorax or something.
From Lorax, Dr. Seuss. Yes.
Right.
Even if you weren't just listening to it, Steve, if you were seeing it, the impression was always good. From the first time I ever saw Tina Fey do the impression of Sarah Palin.
Not as good as now.
It's really become perfect.
Hit it, Kevin.
I wanted to take a break from my full-time career of writing things on Facebook to fly down her. And lend my support to the next president of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
Hey, America, isn't she great? Just the total package. Smart, legs, yelling, everything. I haven't seen a woman this impressive since Jeb Bush.
I'm here because we Americans are struggling. So many of us have lost our jobs at the factory or our reality shows about Alaska. And we've seen our own children targeted by the police for no reason other than they committed some crimes. We turn on the news every morning and are shocked to see we're not even on it because we've been replaced by immigrants like Geraldo Rivera.
She's fun. She just says whatever she wants. It's like her mouth starts driving before her brain gets in the car.
I'm here for all you teachers and teamsters, you farmers and charmers. Whether you're a mom or two broke girls or three men and a baby or a rock and roller, holy roller, pushing stroller, pro bowler with an abscess molar.
She's a firecracker. She's a real pistol. She's crazy, isn't she?
All right, Sarah Palin. That wasn't Sarah Palin. That was Tina Fey.
Yeah.
Doing the best Sarah Palin ever.
Yeah, really, really funny. At some point in the show, they said of Sarah Palin that at this point, she's just saying every word she's ever heard in no particular order, which kind of, I know it's not 100% true, but you could see where you could make that argument, sure.
Now, you brought something up. Did you see it on Facebook over the weekend or just as you were Googling around the internet?
Which part?
The part about Sarah Palin's son.
Oh, yeah. That was, I did not see it on Facebook. I saw it in a couple of different places. You know, when she endorsed Donald Trump about a week ago, the same day word came out that her son, Track, was having some problems with the law, some domestic abuse charges. And Sarah Palin very quickly said, he's got PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and what a terrible thing it is to come back and not be appreciated by the president and stuff. Well, there have been a couple of groups that have checked into his record, and I know there's conflicting reports. We'll talk about that a little bit. But according to several sources, even though he was overseas, he didn't see any active duty in terms of combat. He wasn't in any combat situation.
Well, all I know is what I found on winningdemocrats.com. So be careful where you get your information. But it does give way to some good discussion here. Sarah Palin's passionate speech about Track and his issues, and I'm paraphrasing because they're really kind of slamming him. That's why I'm saying it's winningdemocrats.com. The whole thing, there's a bigger reason to criticize Sarah Palin. She's a liar, this according to that website. Her son, Track, never saw combat in Iraq. Whether he was unqualified or received special treatment or just wasn't assigned to a combat role isn't clear. But one thing certainly is, it wasn't post-traumatic stress disorder from combat that hardened Track Palin into the gun-toting person that hits women. And then they're blaming bad parenting. There is a copy of what seems to... Do you have the copy of this?
I don't have it with me. I saw it online earlier of exactly what his duties were when he was overseas.
It's the certificate of release or discharge from active duty.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And what's suspect to my feelings here is there's a one spot, section 13, that says decorations, medals, badges, or whatever. And then it says no combat infantryman badge,
mm-hmm.
which means he didn't see combat. But this was typed in a different color in red. And you know what? It's really easy to go fake documents somewhere.
I guess so. Here's what I was thinking the whole time I was reading this early this morning. I don't know if you could still suffer from PTSD just from going through training and being flown overseas and knowing you're close to action. I don't know for sure because, like we said, there's conflicting reports on whether or not he ever saw any sort of combat while he was over there. But I guess it's still possible you could go through this if you don't see combat, I would imagine. I think the way she painted it, it's just my interpretation, is that he was in some pretty ugly situations over there, whereas if these reports are true, that was not the case at all. He was overseas, but he wasn't seeing any combat.
And there was a guy who tweeted this, Jason Carell, who served with Palin. He was asked about whether or not he saw any combat, to which he answered, all I'll say in fairness to him is that his mother claimed he was a combat vet. not him. This is the backtrack. I'm sorry, because Jason Carell now says that he really didn't serve with Track Palin in Iraq. He says he, quote, slept in the same barracks, but in a different cycle. So now this person, Jason Carell, who said he served with Palin, with Track Palin, didn't.
Right.
As of the time of this update, the Palins haven't disputed the legitimacy of the form above, which we mentioned, where he had no combat infantryman badge. So,
there must be a way at some point somebody's going to disclose whether or not he did see any combat or not. And I don't, like I said earlier, I don't know if that changes things at all. I would imagine it's possible you could still suffer through this even if you didn't see combat. Although immediately right after she made these claims and blamed the president for not caring enough about veterans, there were plenty of them that came out and said, hey, we've really got it. You can't claim it. That's not fair. If you don't really have it, that cheapens it.
And, I mean, I'm sorry. Was he diagnosed with it? Has he been getting counseling? If she knew he had it, why did he have access to a gun?
That's the biggest part of this at all. Because,
and if he's holding a gun up to his head,
right,
how does he, you know, wouldn't you go take him to some kind of hospitalization or counseling to say, my kid almost killed himself.
Right.
Okay. I'm really concerned that he's going to try it again. It's just, she's kind of blowing it off.
Yeah. I'm surprised we don't, like, as of now, does anyone know what's happened in the aftermath of last week's events? I don't.
No. Again, this is from winningdemocrats.com, and I'm saying
so
that
it
because
it could be a little pointed.
Yes.
It could be.
But
yeah.
Also, what is said here is track service has been in question for years. There's speculation that he may have been ordered to serve by the court system after allegedly cutting the brakes on a school bus. True or not, it appears that he managed to at least secure for himself a role far less dangerous than mom will admit.
Yeah.
Because I remember he got into some trouble, and I could have sworn that that's when all of a sudden he's going to join the military.
Oh, maybe.
I think he was on his way to the military when we met him, Wendy.
Yes,
so that's 8 years ago?
I feel that was the case during the campaign.
Yeah, but the rumor was that he had some problems before, and, you know, a lot of times when you have a kid who's getting into trouble a lot, sometimes you say, you know what, let's go to military school or let's
straighten
enroll in the service.
Yeah.
I don't know what's true, and again, that's why I'm saying it's at winningdemocrats.com. But it does, you and I were discussing this, I mean, post-traumatic stress disorder, I would imagine there are different levels of it.
Of course.
As there is with depression and bipolar.
Yeah.
So, you know, going to boot camp and going out to Iraq thinking of what might happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, usually you think of people that have seen terrible things and have committed terrible things.
Right.
And they're bothered by it, and that gives them their PTSD.
But wouldn't you think if you're her and you're going to use this as the excuse for what happened, don't you say to yourself, but somebody's going to look up his record. It's got to be available somewhere. So there should be hopefully some truth in it if she's going to use that as the excuse.
Is she thinking ahead? I don't know if she's thinking ahead. It's tough not to talk like her.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
I think she just seemed to react and want to come up with something, and she did very quickly.
Very quickly.
And very good. It was a good excuse.
Well, yeah. All right. We're getting calls on it. 312-981-7200. We're trying to determine Track Palin's situation, Sarah Palin's son. Jump in. 312-981-7200 is the call in and the text line. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. There is some information that came out on the internet. Again, it is on a Democrats page. What did I say it was? winningdemocrats.com. So it may be skewed, but they're saying that Track Palin did not see any combat duty and therefore probably does not have post-traumatic stress disorder. Whether or not that's true, our question was to find out if you can suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder without going to combat, and it turns out that someone posted something very good, even if you didn't see combat and your friends don't return. War is not pretty. We know that.
I'm sure there's ways to still go through it if you didn't see combat. I'm positive
Absolutely.
Of it.
And different variations of it, like there is, you know, with depression or sure. bipolar or things like that.
It just seemed convenient. I hate to say this. I'm not the only one saying this. It seemed like a very convenient way of writing it off and saying it's not his fault. She chose to blame the president for this because he doesn't care about
that. That's, I think, what bothers me. If she didn't say that, but it's always pointing the finger.
That was disturbing, and equally, if not more disturbing, was the fact, and I'll read you exactly what went on that day if you're not familiar with it. He being Track Palin, was arrested on domestic abuse charges when his girlfriend told police that he punched her in the eye, kicked her in the knee, and then held an AR-15 assault rifle near his head. Holding onto a gun, he yelled, "Do you think I'm a," and then a word I'm not allowed to say on the air, "do you think I won't do it?" Well, you have so many politicians explaining to us that they're making it more and more difficult. Their goal is to make it more difficult for anybody with any kind of a mental disability or any kind of a glitch to get access to a gun. But he's the son of a politician, and he had perfect access to a gun. So are they just telling us that to make us feel better? Because it's obviously not working.
And my thought on this, too, is if she willingly knew that he had PTSD, why did he have access to that gun?
Exactly.
Why? You know, I mean, according to these reports, he threatened to take his own life.
Yeah.
Whether he was going to do it or not. That's definitely threatening when you point a gun to your head, isn't it?
Yeah.
So why is he walking around? Is he getting treatment right now?
The unidentified woman, that's his girlfriend, said that he cocked the gun and was holding it near his face. Police found the rifle was empty of any ammunition.
That's still not normal behavior to hold a gun to your head.
That girl didn't know it. The girl sitting across from him in the car didn't know that he did. I mean, he's holding a gun to his head. You're thinking the worst. You're not going, oh, it's probably not any ammunition in there.
Well, you know, we're in the season of being able to shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and not losing any votes.
Yes, we are.
So it would be interesting because if she did invoke, war PTSD,
mm-hmm.
and it's shown that he was not in combat like that, it seems to me like that would be an ultimate betrayal,
wouldn't it,
of the armed services?
I think it would too.
And so it'll be interesting to see if this is proved out and if there's any ramification. The other side of it is that I think she's probably done campaigning now. I think it was all about the announcement.
Yeah,
yeah, you're right. Unless that, of course, is his running mate. We'll see.
No.
Dennis is on the line. Dennis, I was reading this report, certificate of release or discharge from active duty. And again, I don't know how accurate this is, and it could be fudged, but it said no combat infantryman badge. And you had something to say about that?
First of all, you don't have to be in combat to get PTSD.
Okay.
It could be a plane wreck, it could be any traumatic experience, a fire. Thousands of things can cause it.
Yep.
Second of all, I was in the jungle for many years in Vietnam. Okay? I don't have a combat infantryman's badge. Most of the guys there never got one. Because, number one, we weren't in the infantry. Okay? Number two, nobody really cared. It's just a little badge you can wear.
So this report is not saying whether or not he had any combat.
Whether he had combat or not, it's not going to be because he had a combat infantryman's badge.
Okay.
I know a dozen guys who have them and never even went overseas. It's something you qualify for.
All right. Well, I didn't know what that was, but it still looks like it's handwritten. I mean, it's edited. That's what it looks like to me, like somebody put that in there.
Oh, all right.
And I don't know if that's true. Thank you for your service, Dennis.
Yeah, bye.
Appreciate it. It's still, I don't know if he served in combat or not. I think that's the issue right now. And now 630 has said, Sarah Palin is not responsible for an adult child. Well, she's claiming responsibility by saying that.
Yeah.
Isn't she?
I don't know. There's a lot of loose ends on this.
She's
really
not
is.
Responsible.
Well, she's not responsible.
She shouldn't be held responsible. But what she then did was sort of hold the opposing party responsible.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what makes it
the whole
debate.
Blame game. Mike, what are you thinking about this?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment to your producer and throw it on, but he said, come on. But if she's going to be pointing fingers at anybody, I think she should be actually pointing it towards Bush and Cheney, because they're the ones who started this conflict.
Well, she was saying, and again, I'm using a version of her words, I'm paraphrasing a little bit. She's saying that, you know, vets come back and they're not cared for by our president, that he doesn't appreciate them. regardless of who started it or who didn't start it, she's saying that our current administration doesn't recognize them, and that's what the problem is. But it seems like a really long shot, doesn't it?
Well, you know, there's blame to go all around, that I would say, and our government can actually do better taking care of our veterans from the last probably three or four conflicts that we've had, wars. But, you know, we spend most of our time actually giving our money and our resources. I hate to say it, the people coming over the border and not giving anything to this country and getting free handouts.
Everyone has a different view on things, and not that one is right or one is wrong. Mike, you make some valid points there.
All right, well, you guys have a good day.
Thanks,
thank
Mike.
You. And, you know, PTSD, it's any kind of stress. Somebody said their grandchild was diagnosed with PTSD from living with a narcissistic mother.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's getting in a car accident. You can suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
Going through the training that he went through and even just going to Iraq could definitely have it. But then, you know what? Then own it. Then say something like, you know, my kid screwed up. I'm going to take care of him right now. We're going to take care of the family. But don't blame it on someone else. I guess that's what bothers me most of all.
Sure, of course. All right. Let's take a quick break. We've got news coming up next. Steve has the news, and then we have more show. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. That's our call line. That's our text line. You can do either or both. You know who wants to help us out, Wendy? This is exciting. Bob Vila. Remember him?
This Old House?
He was the host of This Old House. Boy, how many years ago was that? Was that in the 80s or 90s? Did that start? That was
a
long time ago.
Yeah, it was on Channel 11, I think.
I think so. He was probably one of the first guys of our generation to do a show like that. There's a lot more
now. Lou Manfredini.
Lou perfected it. Lou's the one who went, I can do this right. You want to do it that way or you want to do it the right way? And he figured out how to do it right. But Bob Vila has a bunch of hints for us to help us through the colder weather. I don't know if you knew some of these. The other day I told you one, and I got a bunch of emails and texts from people who said that they've been doing this for years. If your windshield freezes up, and you can scrape it, and that takes forever to scrape it. Or you can do this thing I found on the internet where you put you make your own solution, which is 2/3 rubbing alcohol and 1/3 room temperature water, and you put it in a spray bottle, and you just spray your windshield, and the snow and ice just melt in seconds.
I thought you did it as a preventative measure, and then it doesn't stick to the windshield.
No, you can
instead
do it.
Instead of scraping, you just how long
yeah,
does it
you
take?
Just spray. They showed it online. I saw
Have
it
you
online.
Tried it?
I've not tried it. Because we haven't had, since then, we really haven't had any snow or ice storms, but I'm going to try it. I'm going to keep a handy bottle of rubbing alcohol, and I'll spray enemies when I walk down the street, too. Just give them a spritz in the face. They also say in here, Bob Vila says that same thing works with vinegar. If you mix up a solution of 2/3 vinegar and 1/3 water.
I believe it has to be white vinegar.
It says any variety.
Really? Balsamic?
Look, according to Bob Vila.
Bob Vila. He
2/3
lives in a villa.
Vinegar. Right. That's why I said that. I got confused. All right. How about this? Are you still breaking your back shoveling snow from your driveway? Make faster work by coating both sides of a shovel blade with cooking spray. They don't say Pam, but yeah, that's the same thing. You dig into the slush and then voila, if you'll let me speak French for just
Vila.
A third of a second, Vila, and then Vila. Snow, ice, and other wintry offenders will just slide off your shovel.
Because that does suck when you're shoveling and it gets caked up on your shovel.
Yeah.
And then you got to, you know, clank
bang it.
Yes.
So this just, it's, you know, it's the same as like a pan or something. It just makes everything not stick. Here's another one from Bob Vila. The open door policy. Leaving your cabinet doors open may look untidy to some, but temporarily ignoring that your inner neat freak could save you from the winter's biggest mess of all, and that's frozen pipes. Opening your cabinet doors, especially those under your sink, where water pipes are present, lets warm air circulate and then ultimately helps you from having your pipes freeze. So, you know, underneath your sink where there's a bunch of pipage, you just want to leave those cabinet doors open and then you don't have to worry about freezing. Would that work? I guess it would work.
If it's on a, I mean, if your house is insulated, I don't know that that would be a problem. We do have our master shower.
Yeah.
It's an outside wall, and when it's really cold,
yeah,
the drain freezes.
Oh, does it? Yeah.
So the water doesn't go down.
Ah.
So that kind of.
What do you do with that, then?
Use the other shower.
Oh, all right. That's not all right.
I mean, really, that's all you can do.
That would have taken me weeks to figure out.
And can PVC explode? Because I know if you have copper pipes, but if you have PVC, could that still explode?
I don't know the answer to
that. I'm just curious.
I don't know the answer to that.
Somebody says the alcohol is terrible for paints. Never use alcohol on your car, even though you're spraying on the windshield that's going to cascade onto the paint.
Oh.
Use vodka instead. Are you sure?
I just looked it up. PVC will not explode, but TVR, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, would explode if you did that to him in cold weather. So don't do that to any of your favorite Blackhawks, please. How about this one? Even the best car alarm and security system can't keep winter's worst intruder from freezing your car door locks. If this happens to you, don't panic. Do you know what you use on your car door locks?
A blow dryer.
It doesn't say, but you'd need a huge extension cord.
You don't have
one?
Would
you do that? No, I don't.
My extension cord is longer than yours.
It says what you want to do is get yourself a can of WD-40 and
really?
Spray that into the lock.
Before?
Again,
preventative measure or while it's frozen?
Spray the lock instantly to free your door and yourself of old man winter. It doesn't say if you want to do that in advance or if it's frozen. The last two cars I've owned have been the kind where you get a remote and you press it, and by the time you're there, the door will open. But prior to that, I can't. One time I broke a key in the lock trying to get it open. It just snapped. And then what?
What does your wife do when she gets these phone calls?
Points and laughs. Yeah, it just. Well, it. I mean, think about it. It just. I'm turning it. It won't turn. And then
and
the key just snapped.
It.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what guys do.
I wanted to go somewhere.
Like back in the old days when the TV wouldn't work, what did you do? You hit it?
Yeah, you just Fonzie it.
Yep.
You just kind of hit the side of it, and then it works. Or you break it. One of those two things will happen. Guess which one. If you're expecting heavy snow and sleet but can't pull into your car park, use a Ziploc bag to protect your car. Here's what you do. Secure a large bag to the side mirrors and then secure them with rubber bands or clothespins. You'll wake up to ice-free mirrors and a stress-free morning commute. I'm confused on that. So you want to take a baggie and just put it over your mirrors? Is that
yeah,
right?
I mean, newer cars have heated side view mirrors.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
Can I tell you, there's someone in the WGN parking lot that on one wintry day, I noticed they left their windshield wipers in the upright position,
yeah.
Like they pulled them up and put newspaper bags on top of them.
How did that work?
I guess amazingly, because it snowed all day, and then they got out
there were fine.
And just took the newspaper plastic bags off, you know, the long sleeves,
yeah.
And then their windshield wipers weren't frozen. That was really remarkable. Maybe Bob Vila parks in our...
I bet Bob Vila probably sublets in our parking lot. People always say, you know, they'll tell you something they bought, and they'll go, it's the best thing I've ever bought in my life. And you go, really? A salad shooter was the best thing you ever bought, ever? I have to say this... I know it's become more of a big, it's more common now, but to get that remote start on a car, and I only use it seriously for 3 months out of the year, 4 months out of the year, hands down, the best money I've ever spent on anything in my life, because to get into a car that's already warm, you don't have to sit there for 15 or 20 minutes waiting for everything to thaw out.
Yeah, I see you pull out every day while I'm sitting in there letting the car warm up.
I'm in a hurry, Wendy. You know that. I have places to be.
That is, I've had cars that had that.
It's a couple $100 extra, and I know that's a lot of money, but the amount of times that has just made a difference,
yep.
It's so good. Although, at our last radio station in the parking lot that we parked in at another radio station, on two different occasions, as I got to the car after remote starting it, security guards were surrounding the car because they thought something was up. Because there's just a car, you know, they thought
a car running.
Could be a car bomb of some kind. And then one of the guys was there on both of the two occasions. And I said to him, do you remember this happened 2 months ago? Yeah, I thought that was you. Yeah, I remember now.
I'm glad they're being safe.
They're vigilant. If you see something, say something, Wendy.
We have to be vigilant.
Yeah.
Randy has a couple of solutions for us. Hi, Randy.
Hello, just a couple answers for you.
All right.
First off, the WD-40 into the locks has to be done afterwards. You can put some in beforehand, and it will help, but the WD and WD-40 stands for water displacement,
mm-hmm.
and it removes the water in this case the ice from your locks.
Then how come it makes squeaky chairs and hinges stop squeaking?
It does everything.
Well, that goes into the oxidation or the rusting that caused that squeak. You remove the oxygen and the water from it, and boom, there you go. Things just go a lot smoother.
All right,
and
what do you...
Wendy?
Yes?
For your shower, the one that won't drain because the drain freezes?
Put some WD-40 on it.
Well, actually, the easier way, since you have to drain, is to take a pot, fill it up with water, put it on the stove, bring it up to boiling, and slowly pour it down the said frozen drain.
Isn't that a good idea?
And the water will melt the ice, and then you can start using your shower.
That's a great idea.
All right, you're a genius, Randy. What do you do for a living? Are you an engineer? Did you invent WD-40?
Regretfully, I don't have that patent. I am a jack of trades in a world of masters, and I try and have a little bit of knowledge about everything.
You should put Randy on retainer, or send him your retainer. Do one of those.
I lost my retainer. Maybe he could help me find it. Thank you, Randy. That's very helpful. I'll remember the hot pot of
That's
water.
That's very helpful. Thanks, Randy.
Welcome.
How do people just know stuff like that?
I don't know.
I know a couple of guys who, whenever anything's wrong, they go, here's what you need to do. Just take a little margarine and put it on there, and it'll fix it.
Tom thinks that's funny.
Tom, put some margarine on it. You can go, my appendix burst. And I'll go, just take a little bit of margarine, rub it on the area. It'll be fine.
What do you have for us, Tom?
If you spray your door jams, the rubber seal around your doors, spray it with silicone ahead of time. That way the water won't stick to it, and you can open it up when it freezes up hard. It also works if you spray your lock ahead of time. The silicone gets in there. You want to spray it with silicone because it dries dry. There's no oil in it, so it won't attract the dirt and stuff to stick to it. Like WD-40, after a while, it will gum up because it'll attract the dirt. The dirt and the dust will stick in there. It'll clog up your lock, so that's not the best. But for your windshields, ahead of time, use Rain-X, and the ice will release off it easier.
Rain-X will work.
Yeah, it's a spray. I've seen it, and when you get car washes, sometimes
they
offer
it. It's like a wax? Is that what it is? No?
Not really.
No, it has alcohol in it and some kind of other chemical which makes it adhere to your windshield.
You just described Wendy to a T.
Shut up.
She has alcohol in her and some other chemical.
I ain't going to say nothing. I figured you'd say something with the silicone, but we just didn't.
Yeah, I was wondering. I was going to ask where you get the silicone.
Pam
and
Anderson's house.
Does she let you use it?
Well, there should be plenty extra because they don't use it as much as they used to. So.
Tom, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
You guys have a great show. Have a good day.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, you too. Let's take a quick break and some more ideas coming our way.
Yep.
We're winterizing things, Bill.
Yep, we are. It's us, Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. Remember Bob Villa?
I remember Bob Villa.
Remember Bob Villa? Voila. He is trying to make our winter better. He's given us a whole bunch of tips to make our life easier. Now, this one, you can tell that Bob never lived in Chicago because he suggests that instead of using a shovel, which is extremely heavy, you might want to consider using a broom to get rid of the snow that's on your walkway.
It depends what kind of snow.
If you get a light dusting use a broom, but
you're
that's
right.
Not going to make a dent on most of our snow.
Heart attack snow, you cannot take off with a broom. We have more people with helpful hints because winter's here and it may happen, not 40 inches like West Virginia got, but Dave, what do we do?
Well, here's the thing. I work with water. I work with sewer plants and stuff like that. Do not pour hot water down your pipe because what happens is it's a PVC pipe and it's contracted. And once you pour hot water down there, it'll expand immediately and it'll crack.
Okay, so PVC can crack. These are old copper pipes, and still my drain freezes when it's cold out. A listener called and suggested putting a pan of hot water. But going from cold to hot would make
It'll crack. It'll crack. You could crack a pipe that way. That's how pipes crack when your water main breaks in Chicago. The best thing for you to use is to get some rubbing alcohol and pour it down the drain because alcohol does not freeze. And if you go to like a regular store, spend a couple bucks for some rubbing alcohol down there, it'll cure your problem to a point of where you could use it,
but it won't solve it. What you got to do is you got to ramp the price. And, you know, it's going to be a costly thing. I'm sorry, I'm driving down the road here and bouncing a little bit. But anyways, you just got to have a proper wrap around the pipe.
Right, it needs to be insulated.
Absolutely. And you don't want to shock the pipe, because what will happen is, no matter if it's copper, PVC, you can shock it immediately and crack it. And then you'll have a big disaster in your house. I would suggest using rubbing alcohol, and that's what we use when we in the sewer system, because I run sewer plants, and I'm a licensed sewer operator in the state of Illinois, so we deal with this constantly. So
rubbing alcohol—that's and vinegar seems to be the end all of all problems.
It does, doesn't it?
Thank you so much, Dave.
You bet. You have a great day.
No need to ask. He's a sewer operator.
Thank you, Sade.
You're welcome.
David.
I'm the Marquis de Sade.
How are you, David?
Fine. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. You got a helpful hint?
Yeah, I saw a thing on Inside Edition the other day. They said if your house windows get real cold, get a spray bottle and spray them with water and stick bubble wrap to them, and it acts as an insulation.
And looks great, doesn't it?
People can't, peeping Toms can't right. look through your window, so that would work.
I don't know if that's a man or a woman in there.
Well, because they have those kits where you can just, it's basically like Saran wrap, and then you use a blow dryer. I've never done it, but people say it remarkable.
Works? Yeah?
Oh. I've used them, and I've still got that on some of my windows, and it really does work.
Awesome. Well,
thanks
stay
so
warm.
Much.
All right, thank you.
Take care, Dave.
All right, we have time for one more, and Pam just wanted to get in on this. Pam, real quickly here, what do you have for us?
Yes, I always just buy a can of Lock De-Icer. I mean, it says it's a really small can. It can fit in your purse or your tote bag, and it has graphite in it. And that's what if I ever have, which I don't have it very often, but if my car doors are locked or, you know, I mean frozen locked, you spray that into the, either on your key or in the little keyhole thing, and it works.
It's small, too. It's like the size of like a Banaka Blast or something. You just spray it in your lock.
Exactly. And so, I bring, because I don't want to be stuck at work. I don't want to, work 8 hours and come out to a car that I can't get into.
No, when it's quitting time, you want it to be quitting time.
Home.
Thank you, Pam. And it is quitting time. Somebody said, hey, Bill, you could prove that chivalry is not dead by starting Wendy's car for her every day. You could be her remote start.
Yeah, I could.
That's not going to work. Huh?
I don't know.
All right. Thank you. All right. Take a quick break. Say hi to Rowan Anna next.
Yes.